Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network. Well, howdy!
It's been a productive day, and Mount Cole be gone.
Oh, wait. No, wrong program. No, it has been. It's been a lovely, productive, beautiful, warm, late August day here in what's left of almost level West Virginia. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. It's Friday on the front porch. A time for relaxing, refreshing ourselves. One last good session of jawing before we go into the weekend. And I sincerely hope that that is exactly what will happen. But before we get into the real meat of the cussing and discussing, I want to do something different. I want to do something else. It's going to take about 20 minutes. It will be 20 minutes very, very well spent. Tomorrow would have been, had her body not been racked by the cancers, the killing cancers that are the handmaiden of the coal industry. Tomorrow would have been my friend and my hero, many of our hero to many of us. There, much better grammar. Thank you, Bob. He can be taught. Tomorrow would have been the 59th birthday of Judy Bonds. I still find it difficult to comprehend that Judy is no longer with us. But she's not. She left us in January. The cancers that come with coal work quickly and spread even more so. But in a conversation early this morning, some of us decided that the most appropriate thing to do would be to mark a moment of silence tomorrow at noon Eastern Time. That'd be 9 on the Pacific Coast if you want to join us, and I hope you will. There's for a moment of silence and reflection and regeneration and redetermination. Over at headonradionetwork.com, you can find on the show, on the post rotator, a photograph of Judy Bonds in a public hearing, displaying the courage for which she was so well known. And there are those of you who never got to personally see Judy or hear her speak. And so here we are, less than 6 hours away from the beginning of what would have been her 59th birthday. And while we will be marking a moment of silence at noon tomorrow, I urge you to go and read the press release. It's copied, as I said, copied over to headonradionetwork.com. You can also link to it via a Twitter link that I put up a little bit ago, if you follow me on Twitter. My tweets go automatically to Facebook, and so if you follow me on Facebook, you can go there too. If you're not following me on Twitter, why not? Did you notice over in Africa earlier this spring, using things like Twitter, they managed to completely turn around the political structure of several countries? Yeah, all I'm saying is Twitter comes in real handy. And it's a great way for me and the rest of the Horn. Follow the Horn and follow Bob Kincaid. And you'll be able to get our messages, you know, things like what's up for the show tonight, you know, that kind of stuff. But, no, I linked to the Horn page via my Twitter account and via Facebook. So you can either go directly to the Horn page, or you can go to my Facebook page, or you can go look at my Twitter feed, and you'll find the press release about the commemoration of Judy Bond's 59th birthday. And we'll do this every year. But more importantly, right now, for those of you who never got to hear what a walking, talking, cane-raising, truth-telling, well, she used the word, hillbilly sounds like, hear this now. I think you will be moved, to say the least. This is Judy Bonds at her very finest from 2008.
Hello, Ethel Atch. Don't you just love that name? My old grandma taught me if you pronounce it like I'm going to throw an apple at you. I just want you to know that all my heroes are in this room, every one of you. And the reason I believe that is because of the Native American saying that touches my heart. It's you are the one that you've been waiting for. It's up to you. You're the one. What I'm going to do is show you a visual 2 minutes of an update about mountaintop removal, and I know you'll love it. It's from B.J. Goodmanson. And then you'll hear a few words from me. So let's watch this for a minute and 41 seconds, and then we'll talk. Just a few days ago, a West Virginia University study was released that said living in coal mining communities may be hazardous to your health because of coal pollution. Well, we hillbillies have known that for over 100 years. That took you so long.
We didn't have a study either, did we?
You know, I would like to thank Michael Hendricks for his research and for validating our very real health complaints about living in coal mining communities. He reported that he saw coal dust covered communities and sludge in people's drinking waters. And after a mountaintop removal blast, he watched silica dust settle over top of a community. Well, today in America, in the land of the free, Appalachia is still considered a throwaway zone. The mountaineer, or the hillbilly, is still considered a second class citizen and disposable. And to my own heartbreak, some within our own states feel this way as well. They only want the coal that they rip from our land for their own personal energy. The Appalachians is the only ethnic group left that America can still make fun of and get by with it. The only one left. America still rapes the land and the people of Appalachia and doesn't think twice about it. Government agencies still holds contempt for us Appalachians. They want us extinct. They want us to go away. Mountaineers are always free, and that's something we must always remember. And we must remember why we're always free. The best way to destroy mountaineers and hillbillies is to destroy their habitat, the very essence of who we are. Destroy the mountain, and so goes the mountaineer. When the mountains and the mountain cultures are gone, who will we be? Our culture and our dialect will be forgotten. But we're fighting back. We were born fighting, as Senator Webb puts it. But it seems as if some people don't want us around unless there's a good fight or unless they need us to fight their wars. Then they want us. I want to illustrate that with a joke. A couple from West Virginia holler, or any Appalachian holler, was seated on an airplane across from another couple. Well, the West Virginia holler girl, being friendly and all, looked at the couple across the aisle from where they were sitting and asked, "So where are y'all from?" Well, the upper crust girl looked at her and said, "From a place where they know better," than to end the sentence with preposition. So the holler girl sat there quiet for a minute. And then she looked back across the aisle at the woman and said, "So where are y'all from, bitch?" That's why they don't want us around, because we're real, we're honest, and we're in your face. In most Appalachian states, 98% of our politicians are in coal's pockets. We know that. The oppressive yoke, the poison of coal, is still around our necks, and it's around our children's necks. The coal baron's foot is on our throats, and they're choking us to death as our politicians gloat about it, drunk from the profit and the power that the coal company gives them. We're being blasted and poisoned, and it's sanctioned by our own government. Most of these coal barons and their politicians should be in prison for their crimes against man and against God. If you or I poisoned someone, we'd go to jail. But if the coal company poisons thousands of people, they get richer. That's exactly what's happened. Harry Cottle said, "Coal wears a crown of sorrow and leaves a legacy of polluted streams, poverty, and corruption," and that is so true. The coal-producing counties of Appalachia are the poorest counties and the most corrupt counties. Just look at the West Virginia Supreme Court today. Just look at them. The whole nation is laughing at them. And at us. If coal is so good for us hillbillies, then why are we so poor? The coal-producing towns and communities are dying before our very eyes. Even our water is full of coal sludge. Our corrupt politicians have created a mono-economy here. And history has proven time and time again that mono-economies always fail, especially those mono-economies based upon finite resources. Some people say, "Let's come to the table, let's talk, let's resolve, let's compromise." Well, we've already done that. We did that in the 60s, we did it in the 70s, and we did it in the late 90s. And it was a waste of time then, and it will be a waste of time now. But the coal industry will go for it, and I'll tell you why they go for it. It's a game they play, and they play it well. It's called delay, delay, fail. Delay until all the mountains and all the streams and all the hillbillies are gone, and then we all fail. Every one of us, all of America will fail when Appalachia fails. You mark my words on that. How do we compromise with someone that's blasting and poisoning us and our children? How do you do that? What do we have to compromise? The only solution is to stop it and put them in jail. There are people in prison for less than what you're doing to us, guys. Maybe our hope is with the new president. Recently, Senators Clinton and Obama was asked about mountaintop removal. Well, Senator Clinton's answer was just plain insulting. Obama's answer wasn't too bad, but I'm troubled by his statement that we should rely upon state leaders to help us. Wow, that tells me that Obama has no idea what's going on in Appalachia, and we must educate these presidential candidates. I want to expand on this a little bit. Doesn't he know that this is a human rights issue as well as an environmental issue? And why doesn't he know how corrupt our politicians really are? Why doesn't he know that? And this is a big problem, guys. Let's examine for a minute why Obama thinks Ray Hall is such a great guy. Let's examine that for a minute. We know that our politicians are corrupt and in Cole's pockets. They're aiding and abetting in ethnic genocide, plain and simple. All of the good that any of our corrupt politicians have done is negated by the fact that they're destroying parts of Appalachia by poisoning people, and that will be their legacy. We actually have Ray Hall and Mollahan from West Virginia and Lamar Alexander of Tennessee fighting clean, renewable energy with legislation. That's crazy. Well, Ray Hall's power in Congress is a huge problem, and let's remember that. He is the main reason we can't get H.R. 2169 passed to stop mountaintop removal. He is literally standing on that bill in Congress. Now, Ray Hall has a high environmental grade from the League of Women Voters, believe that or not. I think that they should deduct points from him for what he's doing to Appalachia and the coal fields. But Ray Hall and his friend Zoya have played the game very well. By the time they leave office, most of southern West Virginia, eastern Kentucky, parts of Tennessee and Virginia will be a wasteland. Sadly, aiding and abetting Ray Hall and their little buddies is some environmental groups and some anti-wind groups. They praise him in letters to the editor that they have written with coal-fired electricity that soaked in our blood, sweat, and tears. I want to read you part of a letter that really, really broke my heart and insulted me. I was thoroughly impressed by Representative Ray Hall and the respect he received from his colleagues in Congress. We're lucky to have Ray Hall representing West Virginia in our nation's capital, as he is in a position to do so much good, not only for his third district, but for the state as a whole. Along with Mollahan and Capito, Byrd and Rockefeller, Ray Hall is using his position for our state to provide a legacy for our state by protecting some of our last remaining wild pet places on public lands. Yeah, he's leaving a legacy, all right. Let's go to southern West Virginia and look at that legacy he's leaving. Let's go to eastern Kentucky and look at that legacy he's leaving. Let's look at it all, guys. So, do these people think that we're expendable as people within our own state? Yes, they do. Was those few thousand acres of public lands worth the babies in Boone County, West Virginia, that's peeing blood from sludge poisoned water? Was it worth it? The view shed for a 90-year-old woman, widow woman in Raleigh County, West Virginia, is a mountain being blasted as she lays in her bed and she watches it. She endures the daily blasting that destroys her humble home, and she breathes the coal dust and silica dust into her frail lungs. Is that worth it? Was that worth it? So, did Ray Hall and Zoya, how did they cause good people to lose their empathy, to turn their heads away and lose their sense of fairness? How did that happen, guys? How did this happen? Was it by throwing these groups some crumbs? Do we think that's what happened? One leader in a group in West Virginia had the nerve to tell me when I asked for help, no matter what, these coal companies are going to do it anyway. Well, you guess who that woman was that said that to me. When I asked another group in northern West Virginia to help us with the Clean Water Protection Act, that man had the nerve to tell me, our group doesn't have coal mining issues. Well, I beg to differ. I beg to differ. If you get your electricity from a coal-fired power plant, then yes, you do have coal mining issues. Shame on you. Shame on you. Even they think we're expendable. These people aren't thinking. They don't care about climate crisis. They don't care about their children or the fact that we're suffering for their electricity. As long as they don't have to look at wind turbines and they get a few thousand acres for public land, they don't care. They're selling us out. They're as complicit as the coal industry, as corrupt as the politicians, and mountaintop removal will be their legacy too. As every word of praise that they give more and more power to Ray Hall and Byrd and to the coal industry. Why can't they see that? The entire world has coal issues. Global warming, asthma, mercury poisoning of our children, and water poisoning. Coal issues should be everyone's priority. Everyone's priority. Dirty coal is public enemy number one. And I beg of them, help us or get out of the way. Stop praising Ray Hall and his ilk. Why won't you sacrifice just a little bit for your children? Why won't you do that? What we need is to show America the truth. And how I'd like to do that is through a national commercial. What I'd like to do is connect the light switch to a lump of coal. And then have one flip on that light switch and watch a mountain blow up like we just saw. Animals running everywhere. A boulder comes crashing down the mountainside into someone's home and sadly crushes an innocent child sleeping, and that actually happened. Floods everywhere, dust everywhere, and hurricanes everywhere. That's what America needs to see. They need to see it with their own eyes. Coal kills, and people should know that. It's not a benign switch that we flip on. Blood is dripping from that light switch, and it's our blood. But on a positive note, let me end this way. The solution to our energy problems is cheap and forever abundant, and it rises every morning. The best part is we only have to buy this energy source once. You only have to buy it once. 10 years from now, the new millionaires will be those who were wise enough to invest in solar and wind. And a personal hero of mine, Van Jones, says, green jobs, not jails, parks, not prisons. And it's time for a change, guys. We owe our children and grandchildren a livable Appalachia with mountaintops and streams. We owe that to our children. We told our children to clean up their rooms, but look at the mess we're leaving our children to clean up. Just look at it. Let's redeem ourselves. Rise up, Appalachia. Honor your ancestors. Protect your children. Restore your souls. Save your souls. Rise up. Rise up once more, Appalachia, and stop mountaintop removal. I ask you to join me. Rise up, Appalachia. Thank you.
And it was from that phrase, Rise Up Appalachia, that Appalachia Rising, largely executed by the incredible hard work of Bo Webb, was born. You heard her mention hurricanes. This evening, as a hurricane bears down on New York City, it is worth taking time to ponder and remember the words of those who have warned us. Judy Bonds was one. Nothing contributes more to the overall heating, not warming. Warming is what you do with bathwater. Is it warm enough? Heating. It is the heating of this planet, this closed system, this little blue-green marble time machine hurtling through the universe. It is the heating of this that brings more and more Katrinas and Irenes into being. And there are light switches and signs and wall sockets in New York City, in Boston, in Baltimore, in Washington, D.C., in Las Vegas, Nevada, for God's sakes, in Minnesota, all through the Southeast, that have, as Judy described, their terminus in the hills of Appalachia. Everybody getting ready and battening down for Irene might do well to take a breather. When they take a breather, remember why they're having to do it. because there are going to be more and more and more of these. It's not something I believe. It isn't an article of faith. It is a scientific fact. We are wrecking the planet and thereby wrecking the life upon it. So tomorrow we remember Judy Bonds. And as my friend Vernon Haltom said, we will take a moment of silence to remember. And then we will go forward with a great call for justice. Because from the very beginning, the first casualty of coal in Appalachia was justice. From the broad form deed that stole Appalachian people's lands, to the fact that even today people have to go through hellish litigation processes simply to get redress from coal companies that have poisoned their wells and poisoned their bodies. Coal and mountaintop removal kill everything. They kill everything. They even kill the people who work in it, who think that it's given them a job. Jesus. Brutal. As we remember Judy Bonds, there's one thing that you could do that will make you an active part and participant in this struggle, this essential struggle for human rights in southern West Virginia. And that is this. Go to crmw.net. Join Coal River Mountain Watch. As John Fox says in his introduction every day at the beginning of the program, be part of the solution. We hillbillies are willing to work and struggle, and we put up with a lot. But we need your help. We need your help. So that's where we begin this evening for our Friday on the front porch. There are myriad other places wholly unrelated to this topic that we will find ourselves going. But that had to be the starting place. 12 noon Eastern Time, tomorrow, Saturday. Take a moment of silence wherever you are. There's no central gathering. Take a moment of silence wherever you are. And in that silence, determine that you will be a part of a solution that affects not only Appalachia, but the very future of this nation itself. Because the cancer that grows here in human bodies and upon the land itself will spread to you. It takes your determination. Now, by way of a program note, speaking of which, I should let you know that I may be out some of next week. Again, it's a matter of not merely talking the talk, but walking the walk. There is a distinct likelihood that I will be going to Washington, D.C. on Tuesday. Tuesday is the 30th. Because August the 31st is Mountaintop Removal Day at Tar Sands Action, and I know many of you know about this. You know about the Hell Pipeline that is planned to run out of Canada all the way to Houston, Texas. You know the positively mind-bending stupidity of the details behind that plan. How it's going to be a sort of viscous goo that has to be mixed with water and has to be heated. The whole pipeline has to be heated, if you were listening to Sandra the other night, to get it from Canada to Houston. And it will be like opening an artery on the planet. Because it will mean that it is more important to torture people who live where the tar sands are extracted and who live all along that pipeline that it is more important to have that god-awful goo than to let people live in peace. It means that we will continue to heat the planet hot until the planet can no longer sustain human life. You know, I had an email from Reverbo last night. And he was reflecting upon the somewhat religious discussion that took up the latter part of the program. And talking about fundamentalists and dominionists, because that took up a great deal of our discussion, trying to understand the nature of dominionists, these phony baloney fundamentalists who are part and parcel of the destruction of the planet. And Reverbo wrote, "You'd think these crazy religious freaks would finally get the picture. Nature is in charge. The fundamental forces of the universe are allowing us to exist. Nothing else. We could be gone in a minute, and there has never been any evidence that there is any intent involved. Those of us who marvel and wonder about the universe with any effort of intelligence and awareness will note the resemblance of the huge to the small. And hurricanes give us a clear example of this. You'll notice the shape of a hurricane looks very much like a spiral galaxy, like our very own spiral galaxy. And there are tiny seashells in the same shape as well. As above, so below, thus saith Reverbo. It's inexcusable that so many human beings choose to waste their time in ignorance and fear." And speaking of ignorance and fear, it's hard not to go here on that note from Reverbo. One other note coming from our friend Randall in Pennsylvania. He says, "My brother and I are both scientists, and my brother mentions the so-called God factor in science. It goes something like this. You tackle a scientific problem with empirically derived scientific principles so far as it goes. What is left to chance is the God factor. But," this is all caps, so, "but you put the science first." The problem with most of the fundies is that they don't put the science first. Yet they are more than happy to get into a sports car or jet plane, which was designed by engineers using scientific principles. I'll add to what Randall says, the fact that they're willing to go and get their, you know, flu vaccine that has been literally made and extracted on principles of the most basic evolution. But on Sunday, they believe in the creation. Hallelujah, glory. Isaac sent this along earlier today. I spent several minutes laughing and trying to regain control of myself. What we have here is that smug bastard Stuart Varney on Fox Business or whatever, and some shrill hag who is equally dim. And it was supposed to be a conversation about hurricane preparedness. What is the topic? What do atheists do in a crisis? You know what? In a crisis, I want some atheists handy. Because they're going to behave with reason and common sense. And I think that's what David Silverman, a friend of the show, he's been on here in the past, and president of American Atheists, was trying to get across. But mercy, when you're dealing with a bunch of Radio Rwanda religious freaks, that's some tough sledding.
Heck,
I will anytime.
Father Jonathan Morris told us that in times of crisis, many people turn to God. They turn to prayer for comfort. So what do atheists do? Joining us now is David Silverman. He is the president of American Atheists. It's an I mean, that's a question. What do?
We prepare. We prepare. Hands that help.
You heard that, didn't you? You heard that swooshy sound effect there? That's their graphic for Eye on Hurricane Irene. So this is how... Oh, Jesus, why am I talking? Just listen.
But better than lips that pray.
Have you no life outside your own physical self?
No, and neither do you. Nobody has a life outside their physical self. They just think they do.
So in times of a crisis... That's kind of mocking people.
Well, it's true.
I'm not trying to mock anybody.
It's
your belief. You are mocking people who find help and sustenance.
No, Stuart Varney, you just displayed the fact that you're a moron. It's not David Silverman's belief. Atheists don't believe in things. They use their brains. Because beliefs happen somewhere other than the intellectual center of the human body. Oh, well, but let's go on.
Outside their immediate selves who have a spiritual life.
There is no such thing as a spiritual life.
Of course there is.
I mean,
but that's your opinion. That is completely your opinion.
Well, that's why I'm here.
You can't make an objection.
Wait a minute.
You're not going to get on a soapbox and teach me how to be a good atheist.
You asked.
I am telling you, you are not expressing an objective fact. You say that a spiritual life does not exist as if it is a fact that you're stating. It is.
Shoot me. Don't. But I thought this was supposed to be a discussion about how atheists prepare for a crisis.
Not a fact, it is an opinion.
Okay, so if you want to believe in an invisible man in the sky, you can do that, but that's not going to get me to say
mockery.
That's valid. You can call it mockery if you want. I'm telling the truth.
So what do you
okay?
do? You don't appeal to any other authority.
See, Dave's so mild. Me, I call him a great big bearded juvenile delinquent. Because all you have to do is read the history of him, her, it, as it's recounted in the monotheistic scriptures, and you'll find out that that Yahweh, Allah, God, is the kind of omnipotence that pulls the wings off butterflies. You know, a real sicko.
You prepare. Will you get candles in?
We get candles.
What do you do? Do you get candles in? Well, it's got to be freaking dark. Yeah. Maybe some candles. How's about possibly some, I don't know, batteries for the flashlight? Oh, while we're at it, some fresh freaking water. Because that might be in short supply. Maybe get a big ice chest and fill it with ice for perishables and for when the other water runs out. Maybe make sure you know where the first aid kit is. He mocks him for saying that he would get candles? Sheebus.
True.
So what do you
okay.
do? You don't appeal to any other authority. You
no.
prepare.
Well,
you get candles in or
Yeah,
batteries?
We get candles. We
That's
get
it?
Candles. We do everything. We make plans. We make backup plans. We do everything that's utterly possible to protect ourselves and our family, and if we can, to
you
help
know,
our neighbors.
I think you live in poverty. I really think you live in poverty, because if you think that this world, your life, is just preparing with candles and batteries and has no...
What are you going to prepare with, you idiot? Oh, I'm going to prepare with rosaries and crucifixes. How are you going to make baby formula with a rosary, Stuart Varney, you damned idiot? Well, your life is just candles. Do you see what a little ambush this was? I admire David Silverman. Because I'd have been across the table with my hands around Stuart Varney's neck. And you know what? I'm a nonviolent, kumbaya kind of guy. You know, these right-wing fundamentalists say, and you're mocking us, and then proceed to mock the guy who wasn't mocking them. Yeah, you with your candles.
Our neighbors. I think you live in poverty. I really think you live in poverty, because if you think that this world, your life, is just preparing with candles and batteries and has no life outside your immediate physical self, I think you're missing something.
I think you're living in a delusional world, and I think I'm living in a real world, and you and I are going to disagree on that. But right now, I would like to say that people should act like atheists when it comes to a natural disaster.
Yes.
Prepare, prepare, prepare. Okay? Do whatever you can. Come up with a plan. Come up with a backup plan. Act like atheists. Act like there's no God.
Yes. Roman Catholics can prepare for earthquakes, too, believe it or not. And we buy candles, we buy water, and
yes.
we happen to say prayers at night.
And you recognize that the earthquakes are caused by the homos. Now there's preparedness. Dear, have you cleared out all the show tunes? There's no Oscar Wilde left in the house, is there? Oh, good, we're safe from the earthquake.
If you want to say prayers, that's fine. But as far as we're concerned, keep your eyes open all the time. Keep your ears open all the
You're
time.
You're right, because Jews don't keep their eyes and ears open. Buddhists certainly don't keep their eyes and ears open.
Okay, what part of this looks like keeping your eyes and ears open?
Oh, now that's mockery.
That's where he's got his hands together, knelt over with his eyes closed. But that's mockery.
Sorry, now that's mockery.
I'm sorry, you're here, you're attacking me. You asked me up here.
I'm not attacking you.
You've already told us that we're fools for believing in an afterlife.
Did I say the word fool?
No, you said delusional.
Yes, delusional.
Well, that's close. Very close.
Like, okay, there is no man in the sky. If you're thinking there's a man in the sky who's actually sending a hurricane our way, that's fine. I don't think that's a good God to pray to.
We don't
but
believe
that's fine.
In a man in the sky. We don't believe like that.
Oh, many people do.
No. They don't believe
Is your God sending a hurricane this way?
No!
So could your God stop the hurricane from coming?
No!
Oops! Score one for the atheist! You caught that, right? Is your God sending a hurricane? No! Well, could your God stop the hurricane? No!
Not all powerful, then.
He's not
That's not why you believe in an afterlife.
That's not the question I asked.
You have a spiritual life. I don't believe in a spiritual life so that someone could stop hurricanes.
I asked you if you think God could stop the hurricane from coming.
But God didn't create the hurricane from coming.
What? God didn't create the hurricane from coming? Grandmother Kincaid, we're going to need your sentence diagramming skills some more, it looks like, tonight. Okay, I interrupted. Let's give him a chance.
So, could your God stop the hurricane from coming
No!
here? He's not all-powerful, then.
That's not why you believe in an afterlife.
That's not the question I asked.
You have a spiritual life. I don't believe in a spiritual life so that someone could stop hurricanes.
I asked you if you think God could stop the hurricane from coming.
But God didn't create the hurricane from coming.
So why would he stop it? He could have stopped.
Well, you know, there's going to be death and destruction. Why would he stop it? After all, he's a God of love.
This is what all powerful
no, he could
men.
Not.
Wait. Dave Briggs has something to say.
Well, all right, let's take a priest in Ocean City, Maryland. Let's just make an example. He's praying for his priest.
Yeah, take the priest before he takes a little boy, but never mind.
...to be safe throughout the weekend, all the while boarding up the windows of his church.
Right.
He is blind.
He's delusional. He's boarding up his...
He's praying for the safety of his parishioners throughout this storm.
And he's delusional
while boarding up the windows.
That his prayer is actually going to have an effect. It won't. The storm is coming. His parishioners are...
How could you say that? Prayer brings comfort to so many people.
So do drugs.
And just because it doesn't bring it to you, doesn't mean it's not right.
Heroin brings comfort to a lot of people, too. It doesn't make it good.
That's a poor comparison.
It's an exact comparison.
It's not a spiritual comparison.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are flat out of time. We wish you well preparing with your candles and batteries.
And we'll be fine. And please prepare.
We will.
And your fresh water. Don't forget the atheist's fresh water. Ron and Raleigh writing. Varney is a pompous horse's ass, but since he has a British accent, he thinks he can get away with this sort of condescension. You know, it goes a long way, that thing does. So, that's the world we live in. A world where the choice is between candles, batteries, and water, or pray and pray, live on hay, there'll be pie in the sky when you die. But since we're having a bit of a Stuart Varney moment, here in a few minutes I'm going to run this evening's Media Matters Minute with Jess Levin, but Stuart, it's about Stuart Varney. Because apparently he has, I don't know, a surfeit of stupid. Try for a moment. This is a little visualization exercise. Try for a moment to imagine that all you get to watch is Fox. I know it's ugly, painful, and nauseating, but just try for a moment. All you get to watch is Fox. What's your world like? That's not a rhetorical question. You tell me. This is Friday on the Front Porch. What is your world like? I know there's a significant portion of the Horn family who have read Plato's Republic. In attempting to describe knowledge, Plato, or Socrates, is doing the talking in the book, of course, lays out a metaphor. Some would later call it, if it was coming out of Yeshua's mouth, you know, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, some would call it a parable. And it's called The Cave. And he talks about a group of people who live in a cave. And they are unable to turn around and look behind them. And the sunshine is shining in the back of the cave. Of course, there was no electricity, no unnatural light at the time. So Plato and Socrates have to posit this cave with the sun shining in the back. And there are people in the back of the cave who hold up images of things. And, of course, blocking the sunlight, it casts a shadow on the wall in front of the people who can't turn around and look backwards. And so, consequently, Plato and Socrates posit that those shadows are, for all intents and purposes, their reality. They don't know that it ain't real. Who knows what's going on? You know, maybe there's a shadow of a rabbit that eats a wolf. Or maybe there's a shadow of a god that hurls lightning bolts from Mount Olympus. But they're all only shadows, and they are not the reality. Now imagine Plato and Socrates' cave analogy. Only replace the shadows on the back wall with Fox News and the whole filthy, seamy, seedy, disgusting, excrescent Murdoch the empire. And Fox viewers are the people who can't turn around. And they can't tell the difference between reality and Fox. What is their world like? Well, it's a world where they're told that a man who is president of the United States and bends over backwards to accommodate predatory anarcho-capitalist bankers is a socialist. And because they can't turn around, it is their truth. It is as close to factuality as they are able to get. We mock Fox viewers. We make light of Fox viewers. When you read Plato's Republic, do you mock the people in the cave? Or do you pity them? To think that the shadow of a rabbit is a rabbit. And that's not to say they're not mockable. They're pretty damn funny. In their right-wing moron kind of way. Can you imagine with that exchange between David Silverman and Stuart Varney and that bizarre hag? Can you imagine what the people in the Fox cave thought? Muriel, he don't believe in God. He's going to hell. Well, does it matter if David Silverman's going to hell, or does it matter if you've got candles and batteries and there's a hurricane bearing down on you? Are you going to take time to pray for David Silverman? You know what we need to do? You know, really, really, Emery, what we need to do is we need to stop everything right now and pray for that Silverman atheist fellow. No! Don't stop and pray for David Silverman. Go out and get batteries and candles and water and food. David Silverman will be fine. But these people live in the Fox cave. And they've been brainwashed to think that they cannot affect their world. That everything is being taken care of by people who are actually ripping them off. The mugger is your friend. That's one of those, well, these people believe in the devil, and they don't realize that they're sitting there watching the devil. Watching them run clean coal commercials. That's what we need. That's what we need, Muriel. You're right, Emery. And that's why it's so important. So very, very important. That we maximize our common sense. That we use it all the time. that we pass on the knowledge that we have. Because otherwise, the world is left to the poor benighted fools in the cave. And that is a world that doesn't have much in the way of a future. So it's about 5 minutes before the hour. We'll take a little break and come back. You know the phone number, right? 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. If you would care to save us the toll charges, you can dial direct, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
I've heard newborn babies wailing like a mourning dove. and old men with their broken teeth, stranded without love. Do I understand your question, man? It's hopeless and forlorn. Come in, she says, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
In a little hilltop village, they gamble for you clothes. You bargain for salvation, and they give you a lethal dose. You offer up your innocence, and get repaid with scorn. Come in, I will give you shelter from the storm.
Now I'm living in a foreign country, but I'm bound across the line. A beauty who walks a razor's edge, someday I'll make it mine. If I could only turn back the hands of time to when you and God were born, I know that I could give you shelter from the storm. Come in and I will give you shelter from the storm.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Tyrone Gale. Earlier this month, Jon Stewart skewered Fox Business host Stuart Varney for suggesting that poor people weren't really poor because they own kitchen appliances like refrigerators.
99% have refrigerators! You food-chilling mother... How dare you!
Varney didn't seem to get the joke and issued this response last night.
Now that was Jon Stewart going after me for telling the truth about poor people. The image we have of poor people as starving and living in squalor really is not accurate. Many of them have things. What they lack is the richness of spirit. That's my opinion.
According to the U.S. Census, poverty is defined as a family of four making less than $22,000 a year. For this story and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Total Genius, it's not your mother's soap.
Hey dude, wait one second, it's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius, it's not your father's soap.
No, see, right here I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius, we got your soap right here.
And got your bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention 20?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeedy. Email coming in from Isaac. Governor Rick Perry's prayer for rain has been answered. See, the problem is only it's going to be answered in New York City, and I'll add up and down the East Coast this weekend. Hey, Texas, get yourself some of that fine gay marriage, and maybe God will send you a hurricane, too. You know, I know Isaac offers that completely tongue-in-cheek. But well, I think it was last night when I made mention of John Hagee claiming that New Orleans was drowned, not by George W. Bush and his criminal negligence, but rather by getting smitten by, you know, the juvenile delinquent in the sky because they had homosexuals there. The only problem being, as I noted last night, that the place, the Vieux Carré, the French Quarter, the gayest place in New Orleans, wasn't significantly harmed. And just as Isaac said, maybe Texas can have some rain if they'll just get them some gay marriage. I think that makes perfectly good sense. Because after all, Rick Perry has an example before his very eyes, something that happened in Texas. You remember the story? Which hurricane was it? I think it was the one right after Katrina that hit the Texas coast and just blew hell out of South Padre Island. And the only thing left standing, the only place where there was like running water, shelter from the storm, wasn't that cover by Rodney Crowell just amazing, was the gay bar. You'd think they'd, I mean, these are people who believe in signs, you know, cracks in the Washington Monument, oh, God's angry. But they can't see the obvious ones, the ones right in front of their faces. Texas Betsy disagreeing with me. She says, nope, God is withholding the rain from us in Texas. Biblical. We're all taking up our camels and heading to Egypt to buy grain. Oh, don't do that, Betsy. I've seen the movie. I've read the book. It doesn't work out well. And then when you do that and the brothers of the guy who gets sold into bondage come down, he plays mind games with them and torments them for a while. Oh, it's not good. Yeah, that was Hurricane Rita. Thanks, Betsy. Yeah, don't pack up and go into the land of Egypt. No. Bad idea. Yeah, there it is, the Port Aransas Gay Bar. Thanks, Betsy. A font of information when I desperately need it. Juanita noting by email, if the hurricane is coming, and Juanita knows a little bit about this, being a Floridian. If the hurricane is coming, and you have no transportation, and no money to buy provisions, and no neighborly neighbors to help, I find God nice to be around, to comfort me and quell my fears. I've been in that position. I think you know that I would not ambush such a person. I enjoyed listening to him when he was on the horn. Sometimes when one listens to others... I think there's some wisdom coming here. Sometimes when one listens to others, sometimes one learns. If we do not try to do a five-minute conversion to our own way of thinking, which is exactly what that smug bastard Stuart Varney was doing. But did you notice he accused David Silverman of being of living in poverty, you know, with your candles and your batteries. And then on the other hand, he describes the poor as being only poor in spirit because they have refrigerators. That smug bastard, well, that's two, couldn't last a week in the shoes of the poor who work harder than that smug bastard, three, has ever worked in his entire life. It's true. to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
Yes, that man is a filthy bastard, isn't he?
And smug.
My goodness, and if you were a Fox viewer, if you were one of the residents of the cave, and it was Fox playing there, you would think things like, oh, we have 100 to 200 years of natural gas to continue to burn. Why shouldn't we burn it? And, oh, we should strip Alberta of its tar sands and then put a pipeline across the United States to refine it in Louisiana. That's what we should do. We should blow up mountains. You see, my favorite, one of my favorite issues, you know this is for years, is energy. Nothing impacts us more than energy. And it's always funny because where I like to go swing my stick down at that filthy AOL-riddled Huffington Post, it always catches my eye. You can swing a stick there and hit three or four goblin dummies. It's a beautiful thing. It really, it's like a video game. You know, but just with
zombies.
It's like it's the old MUDs. That's what it is. It's like, oh, go left, go right. You know obviously you got to use some logic and reasoning, but it's quite fun sometimes. And my favorite ones are the energy ones. And right now there's big protests. I mean, well, not big, but they're real. These are real protests. You know, I sit there, I laugh, you know. Yeah, you know what? If I was going to believe in a God, that God wouldn't be petty. Would only be petty about pettiness. Wouldn't sit there and care, if I made you and I know everything and you're gay, well, that's how am I going to judge you against that? And would send signs like a little bit of rain. And I like a hurricane. Hey, if your trees are trimmed and everything's all right, your house is in structural, a hurricane can be quite fun. I like that. There's nothing like going out there and seeing that power. It's like a silent, and then it's very loud. Oh, man, it's just an amazing, majestic experience. And you know.
Sometimes the similarities between you and I, Albert, are almost frightening. When a bad thunderstorm comes, Agnes has to chase me back into the house.
Yeah.
And she doesn't like being out in them themselves, so she'll put on shoes with rubber soles and stand on the front porch. Bob, you get back in here. You get back here and don't make me come out there. You know.
Well, I guess it's fitting because it's one of those things where you have to kind of almost go out. And I'm not talking about, Tom Hanks and, take me, that kind of thing.
Oh, no. And we're not talking about powder or anything, but no.
No, but it really lets you connect to the ancient mind. You know, and you can see clearly how some people get afraid when thunder crackles across the sky and big bales of thunder come out, and you have nowhere to go except the cave. But then, there was always those others, Bob, and those others were, I like it out here. All right, we'll build a house, and I'll go to sleep with the raindrops, tink, 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 on my elephant tusk roof or whatever they got. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I just love it. It's a beautiful thing. I don't want anybody to get hurt. And, with New Orleans, that's funny. I love that one, too. That's the way it would be. No, see, I protected them, God would say. Yeah, why do they live? Oh, they can't ever see any of that. They see a crack in the Washington Monument, and, I'm surprised they
didn't. It's because their president is a socialist.
Oh, is that what it is? No, it was a friggin' earthquake. Maniac. What's wrong with you?
It's another one of those moments where you just miss Bill Hicks a little bit more, isn't it?
Oh, my God. I don't know. I don't want to put anybody through suffering, you know what I mean? It's probably good where you can see it all, or if you can see anything. I mean, you talk to these people regarding energy, and it's always the same bullshit arguments. It's all birds get hit. Paint them purple, and the birds can see them. Besides the fact that your windows kill more birds, we talked about.
Or your cat, right.
Yeah, or your cat, exactly, cat. Oh, yeah, I'm sure you let cats run around, who gets them mice? That old my drunk wreckers out front. Of course, these people with these drunk wreckers, and if you ever slide by my area again, give me a little bit. I want to take you past this house.
Oh, you've got one, too?
Yeah, of course we do. Yeah, it's there, and of course, Bush 04, and that's the same guy that.
And the sign's still up, right?
Oh, of course. Oh, absolutely. And it's the same guy who'll sit there and he'll go on a Huffington Post to read his AOL count because he's probably got a, you know, 2-foot-high stack of CDs from back in the day.
You know? Just gets a new access code every 28 days.
Yeah. Well, damn, I'm only down to a couple 114-day subscriptions. Anyway, so he'll come on the Huffington Post. Oh, we don't need no damn no windmills killing birds. No, it's killing birds. Since when do you scumbags care about the friggin' environment? When? You want to sit here and plow and just rip up a land mass? Alberta is almost the size of the United States. I mean, if we had Alberta in it would be the biggest state by far.
Yeah, it's PDB. It's pretty damn big.
It's huge. And they want to, I mean, and this tar sands area is huge, and it would have to be to equal or to even be talked of in the same sentence with a place like Saudi Arabia. Now, we all know we're at Hubbard's Peak. We are there worldwide right now. Why? Because, like the junkie that needs an intervention, we're in the McDonald's restroom and we're sucking water for our next hit out of a freaking toilet. That's why we're there. We're pulling tar sands. Are you crazy? Now's not the time.
Yeah, the tar sands is the equivalent of the pothead in the middle of summer in the dry spell shaking out the carpet for the seeds.
Exactly.
I hear you can crush these.
I heard you can put them in some gin or rubbing alcohol. I mean, it's like a hopper. It's terrible. I wouldn't even want to disparage cannabis use like that. I mean, this is worse. Petroleum isn't even, it's not even the same planet.
No, it's meth.
It's meth. Yeah, exactly. I mean, Breaking Bad is a great show, but my God, it makes me feel filthy sometimes. I can't watch that. It's like, ugh.
Yeah, but did you ever watch Breaking Bad and just have the sneaking suspicion that it's metaphor?
Oh, that's total metaphor. And it's so, you know, the TV that's here now with some of these shows that we got bang, 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 bang around. Oh, it's just the best that's ever been. And I don't own TV, so I can tell you that, I mean, it's almost tempting sometimes, some of these shows, but then, you know, then I remember all the Handy Chop commercials, whatever the hell else that, yeah, I can't deal with. I don't even know what they got now. They probably got some crazy, you're right, every 10 minutes it's a new vegetable cutter. What is that? Can't we just have one that works?
You know
well?
Why there's a new vegetable
forever?
Cutter every 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you why, Albert. Well, actually, I can't tell you. I'll have to shoot a video and put it on YouTube or something. You need it. Okay, she's not here. I can't be in the same room when Agnes is chopping an onion. It's like being in the horror movie and the girl's going down the stairs and you're going, don't go down to the basement. Don't go to the basement. I mean, I'm just waiting. There's a sane way to cut an onion. And I love my wife, but she doesn't do that. And, I mean, it's like she whittles an onion. And that's why, that's why those choppers keep coming out, because there's apparently a significant demographic in the United States of people who are missing one, missing a digit up to one knuckle, who go, you know what? I need a vegetable chopper.
I know.
Kawhack, you know.
Yeah, oh. Get him you want to get him a nice sharp knife, but at the same time, you don't want to watch them when they're cutting with that very sharp knife. A nice sharp knife is a great, beautiful thing, people. Get one or get a sharpening rod or something. My God, it's a beautiful thing. If you haven't experienced a sharp knife, ooh. But.
Yeah, it doesn't take a serrated blade Ginsu to get through a fresh garden tomato. You know, you see them using, here's your regular kitchen knife, and they're hacking away like it's some sort of enemy. And then the Ginsu goes right. No, a good chef's knife will just. It's like a razor.
Yeah, but that's fake convenience. You know, that's what the guys, those men in the back at the entrance of the cave, that's what they're showing us. This fake convenience. You know, there's something to be said for sharpening your own knife. There's something to be said for, you know, cutting your own tomato. You know, and the people that these people who are sitting in the cave watching these shadows, they worship billionaires who don't never cut nothing. They cut nothing but jobs, and they cut nothing but, you know, fat checks to themselves and, you know, to other kinds of politicians that are going to give them more. But there's a fake convenience. People need to start saying, you know what? I'm going to do this myself. I mean, that's why you see, right? You're seeing it. You're seeing it all over the place.
It's so interesting. Well, you know, I just love the way these things arrange themselves, Albert. I got a link from Benedict at Large, our buddy Benny from the chat room, from Counterpunch today, of an article by Russell Mockheimer. Mockheimer, you know, I don't know. Sorry, Russell. But it's called The Politics of Poverty. And he's talking about our buddy Joe Bagent, you know, out there hanging out with, I don't know, Bill Hicks somewhere or something. And he says, and he notes that a collection of Joe's essays is due out soon called Waltzing at the Doomsday Ball. Can't wait for that. But he addresses the very issue you're talking about. Bagent tells the story of growing up on Shanghai Road right in Morgan County, where his grandmother and grandfather lived a life of self-sufficiency. They did almost everything for themselves, ate like kings, yada, yada, yada. No nursing homes, no assisted living facilities. Problem was, and this is where you took me, problem was, says Russell Mockheimer, I really wish I knew. When the conveniences came, they were irresistible. Now, I hate butchering somebody's name. It's like fingernails on a blackboard in my whatever, in my consciousness. But problem was, when the conveniences came, they were irresistible. And here's Bagent describing the transition. What Ma and Pap and millions of others got out of it primarily were a few durable goods, a washing machine, a television, and an indoor toilet where the pantry with its cured meats, 100-pound sacks of brown sugar, flour, and cases of eggs had been. Non-durable commodities were vastly appreciated, too. One was toilet paper, which ended generations of deep-seated application of the pages of the Sears and Roebuck mail-order catalog. The other was canned milk, which had been around a long time but had been unaffordable. In two generations, the self-sufficiency Bagent witnessed on Shanghai Road, says Mockheimer, was gone. Or as Bagent puts it, the connective tissue of shared work for shared sustenance had disintegrated in the face of the monetary wealth-based economy. And he goes on to say, now we're all at the mercy of the corporate state. It's out of our hands, and it's brutal. But it's over at counterpunch.org, and it's really, really well worth the watch.
Yeah, no doubt. Sounds excellent. I'm going to have to go do that. But I'll tell you, this is where, in terms of back to energy, you know, that does come back. You know, I can point, I have a friend of mine, she's 22 years old. 22, so it's a different generation than me. I'm, you know, 10 years older than her. More. Ugh, I'm getting old. Anyway, she came over to her husband, a friend of mine. They brought over a nice jar of preserves. Now, in my generation, just a little while ago, 22-year-olds would never bring you a jar of preserves. More and more women are out there knitting. Where does that, my wife is a knitting maniac. She's a maniac. She cuts up our old T-shirts and makes yarn out of it. More and more I see people's yards, instead of being grass, which is useless, they're turning into vegetable gardens everywhere. I mean, and granted, this is where I live, but that's one of those things that's gonna, you know, it is in New York. I know it's in New York. I know it's where, it's in Brooklyn. There are people doing it. There's even people doing it longer in Los Angeles, right? There's a whole fight over those empty lots out there and the people.
Well, just remember how much the poisonous food industry and their right-wing teabagging pals, just remember how much of a fit they had when Michelle Obama wanted to plant a garden.
Oh, yeah.
Remember the poison industry saying, well, we certainly hope she'll use some Roundup on them. Roundup helps gardeners.
See, I think everyone knows. I get a visceral... Those statements, thinking about these corporations, turns my blood to wax. I can feel it just coagulating inside of me. That's how filthy and disgusting these people are. I mean, everyone knows that's not the future. Everyone knows that's not. Who the hell can say that that's the future? There's a future there. No, your ass needs to turn around because you're watching the shadow.
You're in the damn cave.
You're in the cave. And that's sad, and I pity them. You know, I mean...
And that was the essence of my question.
Yeah,
it's they're very easy to mock, Albert.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And it feels good sometimes.
Oh, very good.
It does. Oh, my God. It's like every time, right? There's another pig licking, right? Mr. Anti-Homosexual. What is he doing? He's caught in the friggin' bathroom?
Oh, yeah, and you know there's another one, right?
Of course, there's always.
There's always another one, but Ben Birch sent this along to me from Pink News. Europe's largest gay news service.
Mm-hmm.
Dateline yesterday. Philip Hinkle. And, of course, his name's Philip Hinkle. Philip Hinkle, a 64-year-old Republican lawmaker, admits he met with 18-year-old Cameron Gibson at a hotel in the hope of having, quote-unquote, a good time. Reports of the encounter emerged 2 weeks ago after Gibson had posted an advert on website Craigslist looking for a sugar daddy. Mr. Hinkle responded with offers to make it worth your while in cash and added, I am an in-shape married professional, 5 feet 8 inches, fit 170 pounds, and love getting and staying naked. He said he couldn't be a permanent sugar daddy, but he could offer him $80 for the evening or $140 if it was a really good time.
Wow. You know, and the thing is, and here's the thing, if it didn't have such hypocrisy laced to it, it could be a night. Hey, that sounds like a weekend. I'm not judging you for that. It's the hypocrisy.
Bingo.
It's that mountain of excrement that's behind you that you're going to go run back into when your little, you know, breath of freedom is over. And I mean, that's just the kind of mindset that we absolutely don't need. We don't need to stifle freedom. We don't need to stifle people's choices. You know, like they always use the word liberal like a curse word. It's not a freaking curse word. It's like Buddhism. There's no God in Buddha. It's a way of life. You know, being a vegan, it's a way of life. Being a liberal, it's a way of life. It's being open-minded and generous. It's being broad-thinking. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's not being stingy and being a liar. Because when you're talking about being a liberal, you want to tell the truth. That's why we're so pesky. We want to get down to the root. Well, what is going to happen when we do this? Oh, why don't you just shut up and suck on them petroleum, fossil fuels, and poisons? That's what they get. They get, oh, you're not going to tell me not to use Roundup.
Yeah, well, bring you some Roundup and a vegetable chopper. Ain't capitalism grand?
Yeah. Buy it all. Buy it all. Just buy it.
Yeah, and see, you say it's about the hypocrisy. Well, you know what the next sentence about Philip Hinkle is, right, Albert?
Mm-hmm.
He's a state legislator in the state of Indiana. He's a Republican.
Indiana.
Derp. Yeah. How'd you know? Well, you know, Alabama getting some relief.
For real. I mean, no, Indiana's sad.
Yeah.
The roads are the worst.
Well, no kidding. I drove through it.
Oh, they're privatized. That's what my point. That's my whole point behind it, that Indiana Toll Road is privatized, owned by Saudi Arabians and people around, and made to make a profit, and that's why it's such a piece of crap. Anyway,
Hinkle co-sponsored a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage. Yeah. By the way, the details of his encounter with the young Mr. Gibson. He recounts, quote, Hinkle grabbed him in the rear, dropped his towel, and sat down on the bed naked. I love the delicious irony in this part. Several of his fellow, this is from Wikipedia. I know. Several of his fellow GOP lawmakers debated whether Hinkle should resign. You know, when you've co-sponsored a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage and you're grabbing a guy from the rear, dropping his towel and sitting down on the bed naked, it's time to resign. Debate over. Governor Mitch Daniels, however, did refer to the situation as a family tragedy.
Oh, like Jeff Guckert.
Yeah. Jimmy Jeff Gannigut, the Palin News Service.
Yeah. That's what I think.
Oh, and here's the saddest part of all. The guy shares a birthday with Jimmy Buffett. December 25th, 1946.
Well, see, if he just went down that path that Jimmy Buffett went down, probably wouldn't be in this situation, would he?
Yeah. A former teacher at Ben Davis High School.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I mean, there's always hypocrisy. I mean, you'd have to be. Think of how deluded you'd have to be, Bob. Knowing what you know, because you paid attention and absorbed it, could you vote for a Republican?
Never in a million years.
So think of how deluded you have to be to not pay attention to, Bob, are you a billionaire? No.
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 Okay. I'm not even a thousandaire.
I mean, come on. We're lucky to be hundredaires. You know, I mean,
I know.
Well, who, what, what? What?
Hit me.
Oh, yeah, come on. Why? Because you have 50,000 pounds of rusting iron on your front yard? Who are you kidding? Wake up. Please, come on.
Oh, come on, come on, come on.
I mean, because, and it, you know, I'm serious. And it's never more true than it is today, because every day it gets more and more true. Mad Max future, Star Trek future. That's the way we got to go. These people think we got 50 years.
Wow, away. That's perfect, Albert. That is just perfect. Mad Max future, Star Trek future. Which one do you want? In the Mad Max future, Tina Turner sings in a cage.
Yeah, and we eat each other.
Right, and we murder for gasoline, right?
Not pig shit fuel.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
In the Star Trek future, Captain Picard comes home to get his heart replaced, and he's out in a day. And we've got peace with the Klingons.
Yeah, and when they discover frozen people floating through space in some primitive 22nd century cryogenic facility, they ask about their banks and money, and they just look at them like, what?
Huh?
Money? We don't have money.
Come!
We don't use money. We have technology. We figured out how to replicate. I mean, you know, you think about it, those things are kind of like the baby, like little leaves. You know, like you plant an apple seed in the, you know, in the ground, and it pops off. It doesn't look like an apple tree. It takes a while to get there, right? We have 3D printers, just like little dot matrix printers. They shoot out a little bit of plastic, and they make little things. That's now. That's seedling. That thing just popped. That's the future of replication. I mean, you think that you talk about
we print. I mean, I'm sure I remember when Wayne just, this blew his mind. It was on CBS, 60 Minutes or something. Medical researchers printed stem cells.
Yeah.
Through a Epson printer and threw a guy's finger back.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's where we're at now. We're sitting there doing with stealth. Think about it.
Our government, Albert, has around its throat the hands of people.
Mm-hmm. Cave people.
Cave people.
Yeah. Cave people.
Who want to make sure that little Johnny and little Susie spend more time learning that the Bible says the mathematical value of pi is 3. Than about printers that print out stem cells that grow back fingers.
Yeah. Well, and soon organs.
Yeah, right. I still want a spare parts me. I really, really do.
And I'm telling you what, if we go down that path, then it's already there. It's right on the cusp. It's right on the cusp. We have that on the cusp or dwindling oil production numbers on the cusp. Now, we're going to get both either way, one way or another, but...
Yeah, you get the dwindling... That's the thing. You get the dwindling oil and coal and gas production numbers no matter what you do.
Exactly.
Because that whole abiotic oil thing? Yeah, not really.
And even if it... Let's pretend it was, because you got to give them one thing. The chemistry is possible. If it was, and you think the planet, well, it's about 5 billion years old, how long did it take for that oil to get there? So even if it is abiotic, this is what I'm saying, you don't have to sit there and try to prove, because you won't prove them wrong. You have to go in and say, even if it is, it doesn't matter. Because it's not going to fill up in 10 years. You people don't even want to stop fishing for 5 to save some tuna and cod and then crabs and the entire ocean ecosystem. You don't want to stop on anything. You think that it's going to, an abiotic, and then, yeah. So that's basically what you got to say. You keep sucking it out of.
Well, and there's that pesky heat problem again too.
Oh yeah.
I mean, okay, so we've got 5,000 years of oil left.
No, but okay, we do.
Sorry. Let's just keep burning it and see what happens.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Well, that's.
I mean, the fascinating stuff that's out there. I saw a news story just the other day, Albert. I mean, this thing, this is why the NASA story, you know, the man, this is why it just made me want to bawl. At a piddling 4,000 light years or so, I don't know, it's like not even 4,000 light years.
Not even.
Don't you? Yeah, I know.
Just real quick.
You got me.
Star Trek, where the Enterprise could do warp 9, couldn't get that far. The entire thing was in a whole different quality, just so people can understand.
Yeah, it's in our relative backyard, and there's a pulsar out there.
Yeah,
and it spins so fast, you know, it gives out the blip 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 blip, and by using telescopes in Australia, the United States, and France,
mm-hmm.
and sort of just the same way that the Nazis triangulated underground radio signals. You know, eventually you triangulate. Well, they used the telescopes to triangulate on this pulsar out there. And this is just going to make you scream, Albert. They found a planet. You know, they're finding more planets all the time.
Well, it's not really a planet, but...
Well, this one isn't. No, it used to be, I guess, a binary star.
Yeah, most stars are.
Mm-hmm. And it... But it went nova. And, of course, the pulsar went nova, but... The pulsar sucked off all the taking the hull off a walnut, and so it's a planet now, because it's not a star anymore, and it's made of solid diamond. It's carbon. We know that from its radio. We know it from its spectral signature. It's solid diamond. Now, can we not somehow say to all of these little money-grubbing pissants in the teabaggers and the banksters and the hedge funders and stuff, guys, get with it. It's there. It's waiting for you. Go quickly. The sooner you leave, the better. The sooner you leave, the sooner you get there, and you get the diamond. God Almighty, entire.
Bob, we don't even have to tell. We don't have to, because the 4,000 light years might kind of go. Hmm? But Titan, it's hydrocarbon. It's pretty much just a giant blanket of seas of hydrocarbon. They could just go to Titan.
The asteroids. Come on. I mean, they're motivated by greed. Did you see this story, Albert? I'm sorry. I'm going to come.
Right direction. No, you're right. No, they're like those toys you wind up that you got to steer it away from the wall, but it'll just keep going. And we haven't done that.
We really could. We could get them off planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, as soon as they use up all the diamond, they'll reinvade. But it's like this story about Rick Perry that came out today over at AOL Central, the Huffington Post.
Yeah.
Did you see this thing?
I try to ignore this guy because he's Bush-like.
This is just too damn much.
Yeah, he's...
He, at the behest of Phil Graham, see, you start laughing the minute I say his name. You know it's going to be evil and crazy at the same time.
Burns, that guy's Mr. Burns.
Yeah, this is something that gets cooked. I mean, this is something that Dr. Evil would go, no. But Rick Perry hustled a scheme in conjunction with a multinational bank to raise money for the state of Texas by gambling on when teachers die. I mean, this isn't the one where I say, son, get me a peanut butter and banana sandwich and the Elvis gun. This is the Elvis howitzer. No, really, it's a Swiss bank, UBS. And Texas was going to allow UBS to purchase term life insurance policies on public school teachers. Okay? I mean, this is the whole... Wait, there's more.
No, hang on. The reason that water hurricanes don't fall on Texas is because there's a shit of cane over Texas, and it's just blocking any kind of water to come in.
Oh,
my God.
No, so they were going to package all the insurance policies together and call it a security, and sell it to speculators around the world. Now, there's only one problem, and that's the teachers.
Yeah.
So they figured they would get the teachers' consent by paying them somewhere between $50 and $100 to sign a contract to grant UBS the right to buy the term life policy and bet on when they'd bite.
corporations have been doing that for a while.
Well, Walmart got caught doing it, and they made them stop.
Yeah, but they all do it. I'm sure they all do it. I mean, you know, and there's a, you know, but yeah, of course they do. Of course, and of course it's only $50.
Oh, and guess who they were going to buy the insurance from? Not Colonial Penn, okay?
Okay.
No, AIG.
Yeah, AIG.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is straight out of Catch 22. Everybody's got a share.
It's just filth. It's disgusting. And it's like, what? How do you go to sleep at night? Because it's all just an illusion. Right. Their sleep, their rest has to be. I mean, that's just such filth.
But dig this. They figured they were going to recruit 40,000 retired teachers.
Yeah.
And that in 12 years, at least, it would take at least 12 years, and then Texas would reap a windfall of $700 million.
Well, and that's when the AIG executives that are sitting on the board of directors looks over at his fellow AIG executives, who's also on the board of, oh, I don't know, Monsanto or one of these other corporations, and says, so we got the margins on this, right?
Yeah.
And then they feed us their bull crap.
Who's got the short side?
They rule .net. They rule .net. I'm telling you. It's the most, I guess, the scariest website on the planet. You know, I mean, if you want to be afraid. Yeah, if you want information. Yeah,
but see, again, Albert, let's just go back for a minute to those Fox viewers in the cave.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take that story of the insurance bets, mm-hmm. and let's put it up on the cave wall for the Radio Rwanda viewers.
Mm-hmm.
You know what Emery and you know what Emery and Marlene say? Well, you know, let's say they're retired teachers, and they watch Fox.
Yeah.
You know, that would cover part of our copay for next month, Emery. I mean, it's not like we're going to make any money off of it anyway. But they're going to give us $50 for being able to bet on when one of us dies. Sound? I mean, that's just capitalism, isn't it, Marlene?
My God.
And they're there, and they're in the cave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Huh.
Okay, let's let AIG insure Texas teachers only... No, wait, if we get... No, because the teachers have been underpaid all along anyway. No, see, that... No, that'd be socialism. Okay, that won't work. Never mind. I'm not going to go through with it. God, Albert...
It's a sad thing. It really is. And the only thing you can do is shine that light a little brighter. Put a mirror in that cave. Let them see themselves. And then they'll look. Maybe they'll turn around. Maybe they'll look. And if they see you, maybe they'll follow you out. You know, because the chain around their neck is an illusion. And, you know, you can talk sense to these people, honestly. Some of them. Not all of them. But some of them one-on-one. And that's why I take my stick into that place. Because I'll type what I do, and there's the guys, you know, the shills that go out there, and they're paid by the whatever to go make, you know, 5 cents a post, whatever the hell they make. Probably more than that, but, you know, whatever. And there's those people that come out of the woodwork, zero, you know, this, and zero posts, and all of a sudden they got this long, eloquent thing, like they just discovered it. It's like, and then, but obviously, if you sit there and you look at it, you read it, it's not going to comprehend, because there's facts are incomprehensible. You just got to go in there with some, even kindness. Kindness really does work for that kind of stuff. But, you know, even a stick every now and then works, too. Because they'll see. You know, sometimes that's what they understand. You know what I mean? You know, I hate to sound like this, but they're like wild animals. You know what I mean? And, you know, sometimes a wild animal, you know, you give them a whack on the nose with a stick, and maybe they'll respect you, and they won't snarl and growl at you anymore. So sometimes you give them a little, you know, hey, if you're going to be crazy and snarling like that with your capital letters and misspelled words and fail punctuation and complete wrong context. If you can bear with that and beat them back, you don't only need one person to read that who might have been teetering on the edge. That person comes over on our side and says, hey, that makes sense. That's actually, yeah, wait a minute. I don't want Mad Max, and that's where the hell we're going. The oil's running out. This is this, and this, and they're betting on when we're going to die. The longer we live, the worse it is for them.
Because, you know, there were some screwed up planets that the Enterprise visited.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, totally. I mean,
like the entirely overpopulated one where they just periodically walked into the machine and got disappeared to avoid having war with the other planet?
Yeah, that's worse for us.
Jesus, God. Albert, I don't know how we're going to do it, but have as good a weekend as you can, and about 11 o'clock tomorrow, just take a little moment of silence.
Always.
All right. Take care, Brother Albert.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. On the one hand, Mad Max world. On the other hand, Star Trek world. I hate to say it, but I think the Mad Max world is winning right now. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, look. I gotta hang up this other phone. Can you hold on for a second?
Yes, sure, gotcha. Yeah. This is a...
hello?
All better now?
Yeah, no, you didn't go there with the allegory of the cave, but what I was waiting for is what poor sop got out of it roaming around trying to find the truth.
Well, there's the... absolutely. Because somebody has to have known about it.
Well, I mean, I think it's a good observation about, you certainly can take it to Fox, but, my other favorite is, the Nietzsche. There's no facts, just interpretations. I mean, we can go there, too.
Wow, we've done Kierkegaard, Plato, and Nietzsche now in the small space of two shows. Yeah, well, and, you know, move it on up into, who was it, Marshall McLuhan, Perception is Reality?
I mean, that
just sort of flows right out of the Nietzsche stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I don't mean to sort of reduce Nietzsche to just that. I mean, I think Nietzsche is very misunderstood. You know, it's been sort of co-opted by some really ugly realities. But anyway, I always thought that quote was kind of special.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just worth keeping in the back of your mind when you're flipping across and you just happen to run across a freak like Stuart Varney.
Yeah, oh no, you know, and the sort of posh accent too. Yeah, he definitely thinks that can carry him pretty far on that godforsaken channel, which it probably can because once again we're in the cave, aren't we? So what the hell?
Yeah, and of course, you know, Rupert's bound to respect that accent.
Oh, God.
Don't you just want to run screaming?
It's just, you know, the Fox thing is too much. I didn't really realize how prolific that channel is, but it is absolutely everywhere by design. I mean, on the cable systems where there's nothing else, there's always Fox by default.
Right, because...
I can't tell you how many places I stumble into and that shit is on. I'm just like, oh, no.
I will never forget that it was back when he was still alive, obviously. But I'll never forget the outraged phone call that my father made one night. He was religious about taking his vehicle in every 3,000 miles for an oil change. And on one particular day, he had a doctor's appointment and went for an oil change in the same day. In the doctor's office, Fox. In the oil change waiting room, Fox. And the oil change people, he said, listen, I'm going to come back for one more oil change, and if it's on Fox, I'm not coming back again. And because he was subjected to like 15, 20, 30 minutes of Fox broadcasting and was beside himself, Sandra.
It's just sort of, you know, can you please just put it on something that's just entertainment, not that if you must. You know, I just feel it's offensive. I don't have to be hearing anything news-wise.
No, QVC,
but,
I mean...
You know, put it on something else like ESPN, I don't even care, you know. It's just kind of the Fox, though, as a default. When it's not news, it's some sort of propaganda, you know, which most people agree now, except for the people who view it all the time. I don't know what they think it is. But, I mean, when they come out with the idea that, facts, we ignore facts for global warming, and they're stating it now, there's just no shame. They have embraced what they are. I couldn't even believe that quote where they're talking about, well, there's facts to support, you know, global warming is being caused by man, but we're just ignoring that because Rick Perry is getting such a surge from his comments. It's just like, what? I don't even know what to say about that. It leads to some,
if you're anything like me, it leads to some moments of real nihilism. Because you just, you know, you just go, well, we're screwed. I mean, can you imagine? And I don't want to go too far down this road because the choices are so frustrating. But honest to God, can you imagine a President Perry with John Boehner as the Speaker of the House and Mitch McConnell as the Senate Majority Leader? I mean, what's left at that point? You know, that's when you go grab that re-upped passport, isn't it, Sandra?
Well, yeah, no, but the thing is, I mean, that is, I was looking at a recent Pew poll, and I mean, it's some really disturbing numbers on there for Obama. One of the numbers that I thought was very striking was how many people are starting to view him as ineffective. Now, you and I have discussed the idea that, well, no, his being ineffective is just him getting what he wants, but, you know, not claiming it. Triangulation that's not working. But a lot of the population is seeing it as just sort of weak. And so that doesn't bode well for his reelection. And, you know, you could also say the same thing for Jimmy Carter. You know, Jimmy Carter was viewed as weak, but on the other hand, no, he was just going conservative. He was confusing the Democrats because, you know, towards the end of the 70s, a lot of the sort of conservative stuff started up. I don't know if people are aware of that. But Jimmy Carter, you know, went conservative before he was voted out. That's just a fact. So I don't know if Obama is repeating that same meme. But, see, the Democrats are confused because your ass will get voted out when you don't act like a Democrat.
Oh, it's the absolute truth because, you know, we would know Democrats will run away.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm just,
you know, remember the Reagan Democrats of the Deep South?
Yeah.
And that hideous line that you can still hear to this day, you know, I didn't leave the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party left me.
God. Well, I mean, I don't really know. I just see the different poll numbers. And also, I looked at the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office. I don't know if you saw that projection. It was really disturbing. It's sort of a $5 trillion gap. You know, our GDP is like about $15 trillion.
Right.
And things are going at an equilibrium, sort of neoclassical, economic, neoliberal, sort of whatever. It's about $15 trillion. But right now, because there's no demand and, you know, we're not growing, they're anticipating a $5 trillion gap. And they have projections all the way to 2015. And Krugman said it just sort of stops. And he's like, well, stopping. Why is it stopping? You know, because they think it might be, he's suggesting that they think it's just going to be depressed forever or something like that. Just
well, really wasn't that kind
crazy.
Of what Bernanke was sort of hinting around the edges of today?
Yeah, no, that was another, I was like, oh, dude, Japan much? You know, weren't you telling Japan not to do exactly what you're doing? It's just so weird. I just don't really understand.
I mean, that seemed like a little telegraphed message to Obama that, sorry, the Fed's gonna let you flap in the breeze, Buster.
Well, he might be, you know, but the Feds are, I mean, I don't normally, you know, support the Fed or defend them, but if I had the Perry-type shit coming at me, I'd be scared, too. I think the political situation is very untenable for what little the Fed can do, monetarily speaking. They're sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place because no one did what they should have done a couple of years ago. We're back to the bad stimulus that Obama did, and it was so bad that he's destroyed the idea of deficit spending as a solution. That's, you know, so, I mean, it just looks like we're in a depression now. That's what it feels like to me. Because they're projecting, you know, close to 9% unemployment for, you know, through the year 2015. Excuse me.
Well, it's that. Yeah, it's that in combination with, you know, again, the Bernanke thing today where he said, you know, the Fed's goal is to have an inflation rate somewhere a little bit, a smidgen under 2%.
Well, no, he should be targeting inflation to more like 4%. I'm sorry. I know I might get some feedback on this, but listen, one way to get rid of the sort of overhang debt of households is what? Inflation.
Sure.
So the inflation target, if you're just talking about what monetarists can do, yeah, you can.
But that struck, you know, that struck me as a little bit of a love letter to the teabaggers, though, Sandra, because, you know, the whole reason for all of this austerity and their other hysterics is, you know, well, my God, you know, deficits lead to inflation. Well, here's, you know, here's Ben Bernanke saying, well, you know, there ain't going to be no inflation.
Well, no. But the thing is that it's ridiculous because we can borrow at a ridiculous low amount. That's why it's so stupid, the just the ignorance of the Tea Party and these sort of deficit hysteria, because, excuse me, we can borrow at 1%. So now's the time to deficit spend up until your unemployment numbers are lower, and then the tax receipts will go up. I mean, we've been here before. We know what the solution is. I just don't really understand. I don't understand. And it's really starting.
Well, the first thing I thought when I read about Bernanke today, frankly, was you. And that phrase that you started using, God, a year ago on this program, the new normal. And it seemed to me that in everything that Bernanke said today, that is the heart and soul and essence of what he was getting at, is we are looking at a new normal.
Well, yeah, but he hinted at some sort of stimulus later in September, though. That was another thing. I don't know what.
But we know what kind of stimulus those guys are into.
Well, no, it's not. Yeah, all that he can suggest is, you know, to flood the markets with dollars. I don't really know, but it hasn't worked. Q1, Q2, I don't see any real big improvement.
But isn't there an argument, Sandra, that the qualitative easing, that didn't work because when the money spigot was opened up, basically Wall Street, the hedge funds and whatnot, and the great big banks held their buckets under it, filled them to overflowing, and ran home and hid them in the cellar?
Well, and also, don't forget, which I know I brought this up ages ago, of the $1 quadrillion derivative debt that's floating around the world. I mean, that shit is for real. So if you have that kind of debt, there is no end. It's just a black hole that money is going into, too. And the banks are not, you know, they're not, they're zombie banks. They really are zombie banks. I mean, that's what they are. They're not functioning like they should. So it's a complete drag on the economy. And I don't know if you've noticed the housing market, what's going on. Good Jesus. It's been this year has been horrific. The housing market is as bad, or if not worse. It just is not getting better.
And that, you know, that's got all kinds of downstream effects: contractors, laborers, yeah. Bankers.
And most importantly, the household debt situation is all tied in with people's one main asset, their house, having no equity at all. And in a lot of cases, negative.
Yeah, in essence, the entire country is upside down.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And so you have these elites trying to I guess Obama's been trying to reinflate the bubble since he got in, and it's just not working because of this derivative debt that's just engulfing the world. But anyway, I mean, it's a bit abstract to talk.
Yeah, but all of these things sort of do dovetail together, if you will, Sandra, because there's that other little piece of information out there from ProPublica. The Congress diverted $30 billion in bailout money to help struggling homeowners, and they diverted it into debt service.
Right?
Debt service.
Yeah, no. I mean, no. It's incredible. And we're still being told somehow that $20 billion from the bank settlement is going to do something. I mean, you know, never forget the derivative madness that's going on, the black pools that are there, the shadow banking system. All that is just a huge, ginormous drag on the whole global economy. So I don't really know. sort of a bit punchy because I'm working on a server, learning how to do that, which personally is kind of exciting because it takes me away from this madness, you know.
Well, I won't volunteer him, but the sharpest guy I know in that neighborhood's Ben Birch. So.
All right. Well, no, I don't know. I mean, this is, you know, it's all new to me, but, you know.
Well, but if you run up against the wall, shoot me a note and I'll forward it to Ben.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I might have to do that. I might, because it's pretty.
So is this in conjunction with the information sciences and library sciences and stuff?
Well, yeah, because, you know, I have to say, you know, I am somewhat practical within the framework that I find myself in. So I'm tracking on the information architecture track of library science because I'm like, ooh, shit, I might have to get a job and ain't no library going to be left.
Well, libraries are communist. Did nobody tell you about that before you signed on?
No, because, see, I first started, you know, because I had done some teaching before I got into this grad program. And so I was thinking I wanted to go ahead and get the, you know, library teaching credential slash whatever. But as I've been in this program, I'm like, oh, you know, screw that. So now I'm doing, hypertext language and web design and all that sort of stuff. So, yes, I'm a sellout.
I don't think that's quite the definition, but, yeah. No, I understand what you're saying, but no, you're not.
Well, the thing is, I don't know. Luckily, I'm kind of interested in it. So.
Yeah, well, you know, devoting your life, and I'm sure I'll insult somebody here along the way. I don't mean to. But I think you probably did take the right track because the Reader's Guide to Periodic Literature, that's no longer a career track.
Well,
you know, and sitting at the reference desk. I mean, it's just not.
Well, and also, with the whole library thing is that it's under attack of being privatized. And the implications are so big, I can't even go into it here. But it's very disturbing because, you know, your library is what you have when your other political institutions are functioning well. You see what I'm saying? And since ours aren't, the library is in deep shit as an institution right now. That's all I got to say.
And isn't that another one of those little signposts along the road to Albert's Mad Max world?
Well, yeah. So when you had like the Alexandra, you know, the big library, the major one, and you know, the system was stable in order for that to be created. Any of the major libraries of the world, if you look at the times, they always had institutions and some stability, either under a monarchy, aristocracy, or democracy. But when things aren't stable, well, you know, libraries.
Well, yeah, the first library in the city of Rome itself was only built after the period of empire had begun.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying. So, you know, you have to have some sort of anchor for them to. But at any rate, though, with the information architecture, though, the applications, you know, are many because so many libraries are being moved online. You know, obviously, I'm sure you know all this.
Oh, well, I mean, that's the thing that's scary is that I've said on a number of occasions, Sandra, that the fragility of electronic information just scares the daylights out of me. I mean, I love being able to look up stuff on the Internet, but I recognize that that's not a substitute for books on shelves.
Oh, no, which is why, you know, like I said before, books, their stock is going to soar as people realize the degradation of digitalization. Because this shit changes so rapidly, what happens to what you digitalized the other year? You see what I mean? It's like this sort of need to bring the technology along with the digitalized material, there's a big tension there. And I just see it as being a huge problem down the line.
There's that, and then there's just, there's all that Mad Max stuff out there. Is the infrastructure of the Internet that stable?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's sort of, you know, it seems to be only as strong as any other sort of institution. I mean, you know, they would have us believe that, you know, this is the sort of answer to it all. You know, there's a flattening, the elimination of hierarchy and all that sort of stuff, but it's all proven to be BS.
But aren't all the backbones at essentially public institutions either DOD or educational?
Well, a lot of them are, but if you look behind that, there's always all those institutions are being fed by these ginormous information corporations like Google,
Sun,
and all the other, you know, and all the other sort of corporations that sort of control the internet. I mean,
right. So for me, it's like a scale in balance. On the one hand, you have a cracked egg, and on the other, you've got a cracked egg because the public educational institutions either run on public monies or corporate largesse. And if a real, as if this isn't, but a real serious economic, you know, full on holy cow crisis comes along, well, both of those funding sources can dry up in a damn hurry, can't they?
Yeah, and also, you know, you look at the sort of access issues, i.e. when I hear stories about BART turning shit off, you see, and Egypt turning shit off, Syria, you know, Canada.
And don't forget, you know, what was it, months ago, whatever, we had a discussion about Holy Joe Lieberman's bedwetting fears that you know, President Obama needed to push this bill that would, and Congress needed to pass the bill that would allow him to have a kill switch for the whole damned internet.
Yeah, I mean, and all that just seems preposterous, you know, when you think about the expansiveness of the internet. But we keep seeing examples of it, and now we have England acting like a one-state political situation where they're talking, where they're getting Twitter and BlackBerry and all these private corporations in a room to discuss how the hell they can control, you know, the nignogs and other types, you know, coordinating on their...
Yeah, if they decide to get uppity and burn a couch in the street.
Right, coordinating on their media. And so you understand their media, not ours. That's
right.
That's what I think people need to remember, you know, when they're all... Gaga about
kind of makes me have some respect for those hardcores out there who still understand ham radio.
Right. Oh yeah, exactly. Or maybe I'm wrong, but like, is that the, like, and then there's the whole CB.
Well, no, ham is shortwave and has even greater reach than CB.
Oh, okay.
You know, single sideband and all that stuff that I don't understand. You know, I've got a friend who talks to Paris every morning on a wireless. You know, people
right.
who still know all the dots and dashes of Morse code.
And so that's the sort of stuff that would be, that you can put in your buy gold, buy water pack.
Right, right? Exactly. And if you're smart, it'll be one that you hand crank and has a little solar panel on it, too.
Oh, God. But, yeah, no, I have to say, you know, sometimes when I'm doing this course that I'm doing, I'm always thinking, you know, about really, how practical is this?
Well, I think it's incredibly practical, if for no other reason than it makes you, Sandra, look out at what I define as the fragility of information. You know, Jesus Christ, the only reason that we can read hieroglyphs in Egypt is because there was a hunk of stone that was salvaged with a chunk missing off of it by Napoleon's troops that happened to have a passage written in Greek and like Coptic script and hieroglyphics. And that's the only reason we can read hieroglyphs. You know, it took something on the order of 120 years plus to sort out the glyphs on the Mayan steles in Central America.
Well, I mean, and the biggest challenge, at least in the sort of information library world, is how the fuck do you craft structures for people to communicate and search, you know, all the sort of isolated databases and collections that people create. I mean, there's constant regimes being created, like Dublin Core, you know, metadata stuff, but none of it, it has such limit. It's so limiting.
Well, a lot of this goes back to that book that Eli Pariser put out a few months back.
The bubble filter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't even read the book, but I read some excerpts and stuff. And ever since then, I've been really suspicious of every search engine I use because I know that they have a commercialized motive behind what they have hand to us.
Well, and also, no, just the whole idea of the personalization, which is so disturbing in itself that, you know, if I search for turkey on my search engine and you search for the same thing in Virginia, we're going to come up with completely different things.
Yeah, because I'm a food geek. I'm going to get sent to the Butterball site, and you're going to get, since you read a lot of economics, you're going to get to sent to something entirely different.
Yeah, I mean, you know, or some NATO info. I mean, it'd be a number of things, but, you know, I just think that you know, that is just sort of, you know, very dangerous in the sense that instead of expanding like the Internet should do, it's contracting and just adding to the bubble that everyone's in. And a lot of people don't even realize about that search. They think they put in a word in Google and they're going to get the appropriate information back. And no, you know, you're not.
No, instead you get a little thing telling you that you've got 20,000 results and Google brought it to you in 2.3 seconds.
Yeah, and it's personalized for you, so you can never get outside of your, I don't know. But yeah, anyway, yeah, I didn't mean to go off on this.
Oh, no, don't apologize. I think it's so important because, you know, just in the course of this conversation, I'm thinking of the Minoan linear, I think it's linear A, still isn't translated. The cylindrical pottery pottery cylinders in Mohenjo-Daro in the Harappan culture, still not translated. And, you know, I'm such a geek, Sandra, I so apologize. But my mind works backwards that way and forwards that way, and I can imagine. And I think it's tough for us human beings to do. I can imagine a world where, I mean, you know, I can imagine a real Planet of the Apes world. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, you know, the upside is, though, that Google has sort of been pushed back by different lawsuits. So they've been prevented from totally co-opting because they were digitalizing books and then trying to make them their own.
Yeah, commercially available.
And they've got pushed back on that. And there's alternative organizations that are, like, doing the same thing but making it accessible with no conditions.
And, see, there's one other factor out there with regard to Google that I find interesting, and everybody tends to look at it and see it as some sort of altruism, Sandra, but it's not. And that is, do you remember when Google announced that eventually they will be entirely powered by wind and solar? You know, that they were getting away from all forms of fossil fuel energy?
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, they're not doing that because they've got some the touchy-feely, squishy urge to save the planet. They recognize that I personally think that that's a manifestation of the fact that they recognize this Mad Max scenario is actually more viable, and Jesus, I'm afraid I'm sounding like Alex Jones, is actually more viable, more likely than anybody is willing to admit. Not the coal companies, not the gas companies, not the oil companies, but you know what? We don't even have to run out of the stuff for this to become a problem. It can become a problem just from, you know, a bad war, a few mines blowing up, you name it, and the next thing you know, shit starts going dark.
Well, and then you'd be thinking, oh, my God, I wish I had paid more attention to how to write. I don't mean writing. I mean actually physically write, because I think that's also gone out the window.
Oh, my handwriting has gone to hell.
That's what I'm saying. Mine, too. And I was thinking about that the other day. I'm thinking, you know, this is not good. This is a fucking life skill that is that.
Well, you know that, and I mean, it caused a bit of a furor a few months back. You remember that story about the fact that schools are ceasing to teach cursive script.
What? I mean, is that true?
Yes.
God, because I mean, yeah, my little nieces, they were doing the cursive, so I know they.
But it's on the way out.
Yeah.
You know, we're teaching people to print.
Yeah.
And we're kind of stopping there, because what we're doing is we're going from, can Johnny print? Johnny can print. Okay, put Johnny on the keyboard.
Yeah, no, I mean, because...
Because a young learner who's learned to print, I mean, there's no... Unless you're, you know, inside Google Docs or Microsoft Word or whatever, and you're using those really bizarre font types that don't just tell the world that you're, you know, a self-absorbed egomaniac.
Right.
Or a member of the Junior League or something, you know, the cursive script looking stuff. For the most part, it's as antiquated, and we had a lecture during the Prism series talking about this, about handwriting and how hard it is to read. I think it was, oh gosh, I can't remember which one, but he was talking, you know, he spends his life reading original primary source documents from the framers of the Constitution. And he passed us around a few samples of that penmanship from that era. And hell, I couldn't read it. I mean, I had to sit there and stare at it for a little bit. It was this elegant, beautiful, managed, perfectly straight, legible in the day hand. And I couldn't read it.
Yeah, no.
And it was in English.
It is a bit of a worry. I mean, especially if you subscribe to the sort of peak oil, you know, that it all is going to come to an end, since everything we have used petroleum, you have to wonder what's going to be next, especially with this whole sort of computer internet hell. I do wonder.
And you know, printers and no, I mean, I know we both feel a little bit silly and Alex Jonesy about all this. I don't know. Maybe I got to run a buy gold ad now.
But there's some resistance, because I always laugh at this statistics. You know, when people when the computer thing, you know, revved up all the predictions of the paperless office, and I saw this chart that showed the consumption of paper. I mean, it's like tripled or quadrupled. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's idiots.
Of computers.
That's idiots using their printers.
Well, it's not so much idiots. It's more that people are loath to move away from what you can hold and read. Because I'll be honest with you, I have like endless handouts and things I have to read, and a lot of times I have to print it. You know, I'll be honest with you, because the screen is just not that easy to sort of read. PDF files of 100 pages.
Oh, after a while, I get crazy looking at this damn stupid thing.
And so it's just kind of, I don't know. I know this conversation is everywhere, but yeah.
Well, it's Friday. You know, it's supposed to be, Sandra.
I know. What can I say? You know, because I told you I started school back this week, so that's.
Well, I'll tell you. Sunday, Broncos, Seattle.
Shut up, you know.
Please, somebody break Tim Tebow in 16 pieces.
Oh, is he? I thought he was a third string.
Oh, I think he's fourth. but remember what's in Colorado. If coach don't run him in for a couple of series, the Christians will go crazy. Because that's the other meme that's out there now. I saw it earlier today. I think Gene sent it to me. I'm not sure. Joe Montana, we were wrong, you and I, last time. Joe Montana is rushing now to the defense of Tim Tebow, not LeBron James.
Not Joe.
Yes, really? Joe. You know, saying, well, you know, he was a winner in college, and he didn't have any problem getting the ball to the receivers. You know, don't screw with his throwing motion. And then and he said, you know, I think a lot of the haters out there are hating on him because he's so vocal with his principled stand on Christianity.
Oh, well, isn't that an oxymoron, principle and Christian?
Yeah, I'm that way, too.
Listen, these people, wow. Okay, well, I don't know. I didn't realize that. But then there's Steve Young, who's a Mormon, so.
Well, so far what we have is Merrill Hodge and Boomer Esiason out on our side talking reality.
Yeah.
And Joe Montana and LeBron James saying, yeah, no, he's going to be great. You know, Joe's excuse was to say, you know, I remember my first game. I think I threw two interceptions and got sacked 72 times and blah, blah, blah. You know, he'll be fine. Dude can't – college is different from the NFL, Sandra.
Yeah. So you think they're going to have to run him out just because of the scary Christians. Wow, that's a bit of a –
Well, my God, he's the number one selling merch in Denver stuff.
Well, listen –
I mean, you got people walking around wearing the jersey of a fourth-string quarterback.
Well, at least you don't have people – murdering each other like they are out here with the 49er Raider game. You heard about that?
Oh, yeah, Jesus,
right?
That just...
It's just like, are you kidding me? Horrible. I shouldn't laugh, it's horrifying, but I think, you know, people are just stressed out in general, but they might need not to play that game anymore. And where is, what is the owner of Oakland? God, I can't remember
Al Davis?
His name. I don't know, he ain't, is he done?
You know, that's that Soviet style information management, I think. You know,
right.
As soon as you start asking where he is, there'll probably be a press release saying, oh, he's spending the summer at his dacha.
No, you know, I was listening to something saying there's been sightings. I'm like, Brezhnev much?
Right.
You're right. So anyway, yeah, so the football, shit, I got to try to catch some games this season. It's really difficult. I gotta see some. Who else is playing this weekend?
I just knew it was Denver and Seattle because I was looking at the Broncos stuff and the Joe Montana defense.
No, but the season starts when?
The weekend after Labor Day?
So it's the 9th. I mean the 10th.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, because maybe you know, but has the vest popped up anywhere?
No, I haven't. No. I think he's still, I mean, he's still a little radioactive.
Oh, man. Well, anyway, yeah, I gotta watch some football. That'll be good.
Everybody got to get away somehow, Sandra.
It's true. Anyway, listen, have a good weekend.
You too. Take care, right, Sandra. Bye. Good hearing from you. Bye. Sandra calling from California. Am I just completely out of my tree when I worry about the fragility of information in a hydrocarbon-fired world? And I apologize if I did sound Alex Jonesy. You know, I didn't mean to. But it's also fragile. It's just so very fragile. The cities are fragile. You know, I've seen estimates, and again, not Alex Jones, you know, that any given city that had a food problem would be reduced to chaos in, what, 2 weeks? Information, you know, what Sandra says, you know, that England's looking at their own kill switch. Joe Lieberman wants us to have one. Jack, writing from Shreveport, says, I saw the article that cursive script is out. Schools are stopping teaching it. Yep, I saw a news article. Tim from L.A. echoing that. You're so correct, Bob. I just officially graduated from college today. Well, hey, congratulations, Tim. And I'm going for my master's. But in order to apply for the master's program, I had to sign a bunch of contracts for financial aid. But when I finished clicking the radio buttons and checkbox to click the appropriate answers, I was told I had to sign my name. I said I didn't have a pen. The financial aid counselor said I didn't have to sign the paper with a pen. All I needed to do was type my legal name. Full first, full middle, and last name. They chuckled that I was kind of behind the times. But when I think about it, I don't write checks anymore, and a signature for credit card purchase is not necessary. I, too, am forgetting how to handwrite. And this is, you know, this is a very human story. Because the people who have spent the time studying this kind of stuff will tell you that you and I do not have the memory of a pre-literate human. Because, I mean, the reason there's a written version of Homer, for instance, is because, well, there was a memorized version of Homer. And so whatever the oldest version of Homer is, it's the written down version of what had been memorized. You know, the same thing goes for holy books. There are still people, I mean, in the Muslim world, absolutely. There are people who dedicate their entire lives to memorizing the Quran. In India, there are people who dedicate their entire lives to memorizing the Rig Veda. And it can be done, but we don't have the capacity that we once had for doing that. And eventually, writing goes away, too. And becomes dependent. Do you remember? Okay, this has been a real Star Trek Friday. Do you remember that delightful little scene in Star Trek The Journey Home when Scotty picks up the mouse and talks to it? Computer! Computer! That's the kind of process that we're talking about here. I find it fascinating. I told you last week I spent some time at the Highlander Center. And the first night there, I was by myself, got up the next morning to a beautiful Appalachian sunrise over the Smokies, and sat down. I had specifically bought a notebook and a couple of pens. And I sat down and began to write. You know, just stream of consciousness stuff. It was a refreshing experience. It was a magnificent experience. But it was also a somewhat unfamiliar experience. Reverbo writing in. For now, a quote from a mind greatly tuned in and greatly missed. The illusion of freedom will continue as long as it's profitable to continue the illusion. At the point where the illusion becomes too expensive to maintain, they will just take down the scenery, they will pull back the curtains, they will move the tables and chairs out of the way, and you will see the brick wall at the back of the theater. Frank Zappa. It's true. That's why I'm not susceptible to being swayed by political rhetoric anymore. Because every time I hear, be they Democrat or Republican, talking about freedom and democracy, that's exactly how it rings to my in my ear. Freedom and democracy. It sounds like some cheap back road the snake oil medicine salesman. It'll cure the lumbago. And you can wash your floors with it. Reverbo also noting, stay dry, first and foremost, all of you in the path of the hurricane. Leaky roof or no. Reverbo says, my hurricane emergency kit consists of the following. 1 jar creamy organic peanut butter. 1 jar seedless blackberry jam, 1 loaf bread, 1 bag chips, 1 case bottled water, couple of candles, 1 girlfriend, 6 hits of mescaline. As the late, great Slim Pickens said in Dr. Strangelove, wow, feller could have a pretty good time in Vegas with that! That's a rational man's kit, Reverbo. And I would expect nothing less because you are, in fact, a rational man. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Hey, Cossack. What's happening, man?
Yeah, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Stuff's going to be going through the pipeline. Isn't that bitumen?
Is it? I mean...
That's what I think it is. It's corrosive to the touch. It's like tar.
Well, let's see if I can find out, lickety-split. Yeah, bituminous sands, colloquially known as tar sands.
Yeah. When you boil it down, it's bitumen.
Yeah, crude bitumen.
Well, howdy.
That's it.
Petroleum existing in a semi-solid or solid phase in natural deposits. It is a thick, sticky form of crude oil, so heavy and viscous that it will not flow unless heated or diluted with lighter hydrocarbons.
Here,
for anybody who wants to imagine this stuff going through a pipeline, check this out. At room temperature, it is much like cold molasses.
Yeah.
And when you take into account temperatures in the origin space, it's going to be real thick. And remember, it is energy intensive too, because it's a little bit like fracking in that it requires steam to be injected in order to drive it up.
Correct. And to separate it out from the sand, you need steam to process it.
And then you got to get it through the pipeline to Houston.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically a north-south run of the entire bloomin' continent.
Uh-huh.
Pardon me, I'm trying to hold back the proto-hissy. Who, apart from someone who stands to make a horse-gagging load of money on this, thinks it's a good idea?
That's about it.
Now, okay, so you work for the oil company, and you're an engineer, and they said, you know, tell me how to get this goo to Houston. Well, you're gonna make $125,000, maybe $175,000 a year doing that. So you think it's a good idea. And you're gonna have some guys, union or otherwise, who are gonna build this dumbass pipeline, and you don't care if they're gonna put Jell-O pudding and Bill Cosby through it. Cause you're gonna get paid.
It's a job.
Yeah, so it's a good idea to you. But if you are outside that otherwise very much closed loop, Cossack, isn't it stupid?
Insanely so.
I mean, I'm at a loss to understand it any other way.
Plus, if we actually burn that stuff, we're done for. Stick a fork in us. We're cooked, literally.
Yeah, we are, right. I mean, we are, I guess with all apologies to Glenn Beck, the frog is already in the cool water in the pot.
Yeah.
And
it's starting to bubble.
And godforsaken dumbass ideas, if you can even call them that, like the tar sands, are just a little bit more heat under the trivet.
Exactly. I mean, it's sheer insanity. Oh, and you were talking about the fragility of data?
Yes.
That's one of the reasons I will never own a Kindle ever, 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 as long as I live. Amen.
Well, I understand that. I've got one. I love it. But I also understand that my love of the Kindle is on a par with Ma and Pa Bajent. Loving the pet milk.
But you heard what they did a couple of years ago now. I forget what it was, but suddenly everybody who had this particular book on their Kindle, it disappeared. Even if you bought the copy.
Oh, no. Well, that's the thing. You're not buying, make no mistake, you are not buying a book.
Exactly.
You are purchasing a license to read it.
And
it is non-transferable.
I'll never do that. Unless I can hold my hand and dog-ear the page and, you know.
Well, look at Amazon's, what are they calling it, cloud music or whatever it is. You know, for the first year, they give it to you free. And, you know, that's what happens outside schoolyards every day. Hey, kid, the first one's free. But after that, you pay for the storage, and if you miss a payment, it disappears.
Yeah, no. Either it's mine or it isn't. If it ain't mine, it ain't mine.
and those things can happen to it. It's like I have a perfect example for you. having been the victim, I have a perfect example. When the unpleasantness broke out in Yugoslavia, suddenly the Serbs were horrible, terrible people. They have been horrible, terrible people since before time began. This is what ran everywhere. This was in all the media. It was on the inner tubes. Everything you could find, we were horrible, terrible people. I was reading an interesting thing in the Encyclopedia Britannica from 1989 about Yugoslavia and about the brave Serbs who helped the Allies in World War II, about the brave Serbs who lost 25% of their population in World War I fighting the Germans. About the brave Serbs who died in huge masses to aid the Allies in World War II. Have you ever heard about the operation during World War II where Serbs, at huge cost to themselves, repatriated over 500 American airmen?
Yes, in fact, I have.
Downed American airmen. I mean, they were wiping, the Germans were wiping out entire Serbian villages. Everyone, just everything dead. Tell us where the Americans are. Nope. Bam. Tell us where the Americans are. No. Bam.
You know, it's interesting you mention that because I've got a horrifying story here. From a website called Angry Black Lady Chronicles.
Uh-huh.
Subtitled Tirades and Tumors from My Busted Mind Head.
Mm-hmm.
She's a brilliant woman. It's an article by Emily L. Hauser called How Israel Takes Its Revenge on Boys Who Throw Stones.
Mm.
You might find this similar to what you were just describing from The Independent in the U.K., the boy, small and frail, is struggling to stay awake. His head lolls to the side, at one point slumping onto his chest. Lift up your head! Lift up your head! Shouts one of his interrogators, slapping him. But the boy by now is past caring, for he has been awake for at least 12 hours since he was separated at gunpoint from his parents at 2 that morning. I wish you'd let me go, the boy whimpers, just so I can get some sleep. During the nearly six-hour video, 14-year-old Palestinian Islam Tamimi, exhausted and scared, is steadily broken to the point where he starts to incriminate men from his village and weave fantastic tales that he believes his tormentors want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
This rarely seen footage by The Independent offers a glimpse into an Israeli interrogation, almost a rite of passage that hundreds of Palestinian children accused of throwing stones undergo every year. Samir Shilu, 12, was asleep when the soldiers smashed in the front door of his house one night. He and his older brother emerged bleary-eyed from their bedroom to find 6 masked soldiers in their living room. Checking the boy's name on his father's identity card, the officer looked shocked when he saw he had to arrest a boy, says Samir's father, Saher. I said, he's too young. Why do you want him? I don't know, he said. Blindfolded and his hands tied painfully behind his back with plastic cords, Samir was bundled into a jeep, his father calling out to him not to be afraid. We cried, all of us, his father says. I know my sons. They don't throw stones. In the hours before his interrogation, Samir was kept blindfolded and handcuffed and prevented from sleeping. Eventually taken for interrogation without a lawyer or parent present, a man accused him of being in a demonstration and showed him footage of a boy throwing stones, claiming it was him. He said, this is you, and I said it wasn't me. Then he asked me, who are they, and I said that I didn't know, Samir says. At one point, the man started shouting at me and grabbed me by the collar and said, I'll throw you out of the window and beat you with a stick if you don't confess. It goes on, but the numbers are what is harrowing, Cossack. By the numbers, the estimated number of Palestinian children detained and prosecuted in Israeli military courts since 2000 shows a report by Defense for Children International, Palestine. That number, 7,000. The percentage of children subjected to some form of physical violence while in custody, about 91% are also believed to be blindfolded at some point during their detention. That percentage, 87. The minimum age of criminal responsibility as stipulated by Israeli Military Order 1651, the age of 12. The percentage of children who are arrested that are arrested between midnight and 5 a.m., that percentage, Cossack, is 62. They think they're fighting terrorism, you know, when all they're doing is creating it.
Well, as I recall, the Nazis behaved exactly the same way.
My point.
Yeah, but if you say that, you're anti-Semitic.
Or maybe Ed Schultz will just call you one, like he did Mike Malloy.
Well, that's... If it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's a duck.
You know, God Almighty.
I mean, that's all I can say.
I've been listening to Malloy for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's not an anti-Semitic bone. There's not an anti-Semitic cell in the man's body.
No.
But Ed Schultz can sit on a stage in, I believe, Seattle, a couple of years ago.
Schultz is an idiot.
And call him that.
Schultz is an idiot. I have very little respect for most of these people. I'm losing respect vanishingly quickly for even Rachel Maddow, who is an Obama bot in the worst way.
But understand, Cossack, it's some of what Cenk Uygur was talking about. If you want access and you want the numbers that, say, an MSNBC will deliver, there are certain things you may not do. You know, a lot of people think that Keith Olbermann's departure from MSNBC had something to do with, you know, that flap over a campaign donation, or he couldn't get along with management, or he's a total prima donna prick, or, you know, whatever. But I personally believe it has to do with the fact that, you know, he delivered scathing lectures or scathing editorials that included in its condemnation Obama and the people in his administration.
Correct. Well, that and the fact that, you know, he would rule on many without fear or favor, as they say.
I mean, did you see this story? Oh, God, I hope I've still got it. Dadgummit, give me just a minute. I'm on the fly here. Not Brad Pitt. Good Will Hunting, one of those guys. Mm-hmm. His mom's a teacher.
Right.
Come on, somebody in the chat room, tell me. Oh, this is crazy. Anyway, his mom's a teacher. He was asked to speak at the big education rally in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
We even ran the audio of him.
Right.
Well, as he was on the way, all at the last moment, suddenly he gets a call from the Department of Education. Oh, we want to speak with you badly. And at that point in time, he just told him, okay, it's not Ben Affleck, it's the other guy. And he said, no.
Matt Damon?
Yeah, Matt Damon. Thank you. He said no. Now, meanwhile, in the weeks leading up to the education conference, the organizers had tried desperately to get a meeting with people in the Obama Department of Education.
Mm-hmm.
No thanks. They were busy. They had to do their hair. Their mother called them. The dog ate the dog ate the phone number. Whatever. But then once it became obvious that Matt Damon was going to speak, suddenly they wanted to speak to him. Because, you know, they wanted to see what the message was going to be, and they wanted to be able to try to deflect it on the front end.
Right.
And he just said no.
Let's massage the message.
Yeah, but you see, I mean, you see how that works.
Mm-hmm.
And when that does happen, well, I'm wondering about, you know, look at the way people who are being arrested, like Bill McKibben's report. Look at the way people who are being arrested at the tar sands protest are being treated.
Oh yeah,
they're being treated like crap.
Yeah, I mean, I've been arrested at demonstrations before in D.C. And it's, as you said, it's like catch and release normally.
Not for this, it's not.
No.
And I need people to understand that if I am gone last week, if I am gone next week to this thing, don't be looking for any pictures of Bob getting arrested. Because I won't. Well, no, I really, I know.
Say about it.
I know how not to get arrested. You know, I will speak. And I will speak forcefully. But I won't get arrested. Because my family cannot afford my arrest.
No.
And I'm not going to sit here and put on a fundraiser to cover my bail. And thirdly, I disagree with it. I disagree with the tactic. And I'm probably pissing people off right now, Cossack. But, no, giving the bail money to the federal government in exchange for my right to exercise my First Amendment rights,
yeah,
is absolute and utter unmitigated bull.
Of course.
So I'll say my thing. And frankly, you know, I don't think you've got to have a sit-down civil disobedience in order to make the point. And I'm not in any way dismissing those who have done it. But I think they are making a greater statement by their persistent presence and their refusal to go away.
Exactly.
That's what makes it different. So I hope folks will understand.
Well, in the old days, what we would do, and this would actually happen, we'd sit there and pitch tents in Lafayette Park. Don't like it, bust me. And they would, for, you know, vagrancy or whatever, put us in there for a couple hours and let us out.
Yeah.
Didn't charge us money or anything. It's just, you know.
But now in 2011, even when it's gentle, you know, ask Malloy. There's nothing gentle about it. It's a howling pain in the butt.
Oh yeah.
And they're not particularly friendly about it.
No.
And they take you, I mean, you know you're D.C., a lot of other people do as well. Okay, so you're down there at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue on the sidewalk in front of the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And you get arrested and you go into the Group W bus. And a little bit later, once they've got a bus full, they drive you all the way across D.C. and over into the wilds of Anacostia.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's where the headquarters of the park police are, and that's who has jurisdiction in this case.
Yep.
I think it was Jim one night on the show who said, yeah, good luck getting a cab in Anacostia.
Yeah, especially 4 o'clock in the morning. And when they
well, health. I mean, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, that facility, the only thing near it is a soccer field. And that's what Pterodactyl and I did while we waited for Malloy to be released. We sat and watched some local D.C. guys playing soccer. I mean, there wasn't nothing nowhere.
No. It's a long hike to get anywhere. And that's exactly what it is, the hike. That's out, if I'm not mistaken, that's out near St. Elizabeth. Out in that area.
Yeah.
And
so,
St. Elizabeth is in the middle of nowhere.
So, you know from whence I come.
Oh, yeah. Well, not only that, but, you know, as you said, as I've been reading, they're not being very genteel or gentle with the people they arrest. They're really brutalizing them. Kind of on a milder scale of what you were talking about with the Palestinians. They're behaving the same way. They're going to teach you a lesson. You will learn.
Yeah, don't come back here and be protest, you know. Because, you know, there were stories about how Bill McKibben was talking about, you know, we all wore our Obama buttons to remind us why we knocked on all those doors.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big movement. If I was Barack Obama, I would be thinking seriously about putting the kibosh on that pipeline.
No, they don't care.
But by the same token, he also wants to be reelected, so that's going to be some big that's some big money to be looking at. But as it was noted to me a few moments ago, Mark wrote in and sent me a link. Koch brothers positioned to be big winners if Keystone XL pipeline is approved.
No, of course.
And he says, are these the teabag Koch brothers? Why, but of course. Oh.
Same one. Oh, and another thing, I was reading an interesting article in Civil War Times. Don't know if you ever read the magazine.
Yes, I have.
And excerpts from Frederick Law Olmsted's Journeys in the South right before the Civil War, like about 1852 or something of that nature. And he made some very good points. He says, you know, before we look down our noses at slavery, as repugnant as it is it really that different from allowing workers to freeze to death or starve because they cannot find work, as happens up north? And he makes a very good point. In the South, as bad as slavery was, you took care of your slaves by and large, if for no other reason, as you would take care of your tools. They're expensive. You don't want to ruin them.
The vast majority of plantation wealth was in its slaves.
Correct.
But by the same token, it was far more brutal than the circumstance described in the North, simply because, well, there's that ephemeral word freedom again.
True.
You know, you'll hear people, for instance, talking about some politician getting a so-called slap on the wrist when he gets busted and getting sent to a so-called federal country club prison.
Correct.
You know what? You can call it country club all day long. It's still a prison because a gate slams behind you.
Oh, that's true.
And you can't walk back through it until somebody else says so.
That's true. But I remember seeing down here at Eglin Air Force Base, one of the former governors of Maryland, who was...
Yeah. Spiro Agnew?
No.
Oh.
No. Mandel. And he was down there at the detention facility they have. And, yeah, he was picking up trash in the morning, you know, with a little stick with a nail on it, you know. And in the afternoon, I also saw him playing tennis. They are country clubs comparatively, Bob. If you're going to lock me up, please lock me up in one of those.
Oh, as compared to Angola in Louisiana,
yeah.
or Parchman in Mississippi, hell yes.
Pelican Island.
That nightmare place in Florida, yeah. I mean, no, I can't disagree.
California. Yeah.
I got to roll out of here, though, Cossack.
Oh, right.
Quitting okay. time.
Take care. Have a nice weekend.
All right.
Hugs and kisses to Agnes and the kids.
We'll do it. You take right. care. Talk to you take soon. Care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Cossack calling from North Florida. And it is. It's time to wrap up. Rick Smith is on his way. If you can't catch Rick Smith live, then by all means catch him on the podcast. It's downloadable for free at whiterosesociety.org. You will find Rick Smith to be one of the most compelling and one of the best hosts, radio hosts, that you have lately heard. He is profoundly good, especially, well, no especially. There's nothing he touches that he is not good at. I will mention this at the close of the program and hope that you will respond. Contributions have been significantly low over the last 4 or 5 days. And we are coming up on the end of August. We were making a nice run at actually making August's goal, and that has sort of slipped into the realm of unlikelihood. We look for folks to do $10 a piece once a month. And thank you to those of you who have responded this week. It would be bad shape otherwise. PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address. I have news. Got a note from Sparky earlier today saying, telling me to note that John's snail mail challenge is only $20 away from being met. We need a $20 contribution or a series of $10 contributions, a couple of $10 contributions, whatever, via snail mail. The snail mail address is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. And we can always use your PayPal contributions as well. It all serves the same purpose. Thank you for joining me this week. I'll be back Monday, and we'll figure out if I'm going to D.C. or not. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thanks to our chat room moderators, Sparky and Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Susan did some quick turnaround work today, getting the moment of silence notice up for Judy Bonds' birthday tomorrow. It's at headonradionetwork.com. Appalachian justice activists commemorate Judy Bonds' birthday. Go have a read. And then noon, or whatever noon Eastern time is, wherever you are, take a moment, and having taken a moment of silence, go forward boldly and loudly. Okay, John, your snail mail challenge has been met. I'll have Boss Man Wayne look and tally him up, and I'll let you know when it's all in. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy, our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy at headonradionetwork.com. Thanks to my head writer and spiritual advisor, David in Tennessee. Thanks to John Fox for all that he does. His weekend's already well underway. Hope you're enjoying it, John. Hell, I hope you're getting it. You might be on the road. And thanks to Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Since 2002, almost 10 years, that he has been in the business of literally saving liberal talk on the Internet. Never sends a bill, but he does need your help. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Go there, join, be part of the solution. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Have a great weekend. Rick Smith is next.